Show.
Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Looky here, it's Friday. Friday the 21st of September, 2012. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is The Horn. Head On RadioNetwork.com. We are an internet-only based radio network. We are broadcasting from and into the future of electronic media on planet Earth, at least until we get the little plugs in our necks, or maybe it'll just be infrared and we'll just sort of wave a wrist at a machine. I don't know. But internet radio is the future. And for nearly 7 years now, The Horn has been broadcasting with an eye toward that future. Of course, you can get The Horn on a wide variety of internet platforms. Oh, let's see. What all? Well, one of the most popular platforms appears to be TuneIn Radio. You can get that on Android and iPhone devices for your smartphone. You can also go and listen online there. Now, if you're just listening online, however, it's every bit as easy to go to headonradionetwork.com and click Listen Live, and boom, there you are. Or you can listen live via the links provided conveniently by the man who has single-handedly just about saved internet radio on or progressive radio on the internet for the last 10 years. 2012 is, after all, the 10th anniversary of WhiteRoseSociety.org, an effort put forward by another visionary, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. The podcast address is there as well, and of course you can get the podcasts at iTunes. Now, did we cover all those bases? Yes, I think we did. It is Friday. Friday is reserved here for Friday on the front porch. Hopefully a little bit more relaxed, a little loosey-goosey, a little humor, a little bit more laid back. It's the end of the week, and we don't want to be all stressed out going into the weekend. Hopefully it'll work out that way, although there are certainly no guarantees involved. But I had a story last night that I decided to save for today simply because it did have a lighthearted quality to it. You know how to reach the program, right? 877-443-2366 is the toll-free number if you need us to carry the freight. Yeah, and there's a dial tone. She's a-workin'. If you can dial direct, then you don't need us to carry the long distance. 304-658-3333 goes into the same device, the same machine, and the same queue. And take advantage of it either way. I like to think that, and I think many of our callers would agree, rather than having me doing the trumpet tooting here. If you can't feel relaxed on the horn in conversation, well, you're probably one of those people who is so stressed out you have clenched hair. Because this is easy. This is just, counting the terrestrial radio days in which we were also streaming, nearly 10 years of what we hoped would be the not quite as structured, not quite as authoritarian notion of radio talk or talk radio as what folks were used to. this is free and easy. This is long form. There's no, you know, there's no stress here. I say this not for the regulars, the members of the Horn family that have been around for a long time, but because we do have a way of adding new listeners all the time, and folks might want to know exactly what's going on here. This radio is progressive. This radio is liberal. This radio is humanist. This radio is irreligious, non-religious, and some might even say anti-religious. This radio is for real people. Not scripted, and I have no idea who will be on any given line any moment I press the button. And nothing's going to get you hung up on. Unless you turn out to be a right-winger, and then we'll just agree to disagree, and I'll tell you goodbye and ask you never to call again. There is no time on the horn for a right-winger. You've got 1,000 hours of radio for every hour of radio that any progressive does. So right-wing talking points need to be aired over at, you know, Sean Hannity jobs program, that life support system for a haircut. Or maybe maybe you could call if you're, you know, if you're really slain in the spirit, you might be able to call Brother Governor Mike Hoekstraby. He likes to hear that kind of crap. I don't know if he'll ever get. I don't know what would happen if you tried to dial Flush Flimball. My friends, yeah, you get the idea. This, however, no stress, easy, relaxed, and hopefully fun. So with the idea of Friday on the front porch, Friday on the front porch means this is just a week's end, a conversation at the end of the week when we're all sort of mopping our brows and knocking the dust off our boots and sitting down in a rocking chair on the front porch like we do here in the hills and hollers of whatever is left of what used to be wild, wonderful West by God, Virginia. Knock the toxic dust off your boots. Mop your brow. Take a load off. Get a glass of lemonade while we've still got warm weather and we can be on the porch. Get a glass of sweet iced tea. Maybe take a swig out of that old crockery jug over there that's got the corn cob stopper in it. But be careful with your swigging. You don't want to be doing any guzzling. That stuff's jet fuel. It's probably about 160 proof. Don't let the peach flavor fool you. So that's what this is all about. Our conversation, our time, not theirs, no agenda, and no advertisers. Really, no advertisers. And just something, a place for us to build community. And time after time after time, I am reminded of what an amazing community you have built. I sit down behind the microphone, but you're the ones who've built the community. You have made the idea, the notion that we're reaching across to each other, across a continent and around a globe, very, very much real. Wow, okay, I got to see this picture. Jug of punch in the chat room. Have you ever been to the chat room? Head on radionetwork.com/chatroom. It's free, it's easy, and you can sign right up. Oh man, jug of punch. It hurts my heart. 18.5 quarts of fresh home canned sauerkraut. Like I said, with some of that good mustard and a right good broad or a dog on a toasted or steamed bun. Woohoo! Yeah. And, of course, somebody that takes a blood pressure pill should probably not be thinking about it. You know what I'd like? A good swig of that kraut juice. We hillbillies think about things like kraut juice. I remember when I was just a little baby liberal playing high school football. It was about the time that Gatorade was coming out, and I'd get home all hot and sweaty, and other kids would be having Gatorade, and one day my mom said to me, "Drink this." She handed me a glass full of this sort of cloudy stuff, but it was really, she had it really, really cold, and I took a swig, and Oh, I never wanted Gatorade again for the rest of my football career because what she'd handed me was kraut juice. Of course, now, nearing 50, I do take a blood pressure pill, so, yeah, there's that. But this is Friday, and we have lots of stuff we can potentially go into this evening. Hopefully, you will drive the conversation more than I. But, well, I had to start with this. You know, I told you last night that I was saving a story, a Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist story. You know, Rand Paul is a libertarian ophthalmologist. And he deserves to be comfortably well off. So he showed up. He showed up Thursday morning on that bastion of news and information on MSNBC, Morning Joe. Morning Joke. Where the guy... excuse me, I feel a sneeze coming up. Oh, hold on. I'll try to stop it. Clasutis! Where the guy who... no one really knows what kind of business he had in the death of Lori Clasutis, but somehow or another he managed to stay out of prison. I think there was a dummied-up medical examiner somewhere in that process, if I recall correctly. But anyway, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, showed up on Morning Joe. And, you know, being a libertarian ophthalmologist, he explained how the free market works. Now bear in mind that in times past, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, has explained that people like he need elevated repayment rates from government health care, you know, Medicare and Medicaid, because he deserves a comfortable living. No, he really did. He said that. But he's got experience with people with, you know, the great mass of the uninsured. I mean, he practiced in Kentuckystan. And he wants he wants to pass the benefit of his wisdom along to us.
You don't think that there is a moral issue in getting people health care when they cannot afford it in the open market?
Sure,
when
there is. Yeah, but you've got your heart, and you have to also use your brain. How do you distribute this good to the most people and get them the most benefit? And my argument would be that government is inherently inept at doing most things because government doesn't get...
Except for one problem. As compared to any number, say United Healthcare, Kaiser Permanente, whatever, as compared to any for-profit healthcare system, the government is extremely efficient. They don't have multi-million-dollar year-end bonuses. They don't have massive advertising campaigns. They don't have inflated price. No. The single most efficient healthcare delivery systems in the United States are Medicare, Medicaid, and VA. But Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, knows that we need a free market solution.
Inherently inept at doing most things because government doesn't get the proper signals. What I would say is that the marketplace.
Government doesn't get the proper signals. What would those signals be, Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist? Is that when the for-profit medical industry sort of gives the high sign and says, "Yo, a little more money this way. We're not feeling as comfortable as maybe we ought to." Now, don't make any overt moves. Just acknowledge the high sign there. Is that the kind of signals we're talking about? Free market. That's where
signals.
We're.
Signals. What I would say is that the marketplace works very well. Capitalism has not been tried yet in healthcare.
You what, Edith? Capitalism has not been tried in healthcare?
I'm pretty sure that the health insurance industry is not running on some sort of Jesus-driven Marxist model. Because, you know, I mean, it seems like capitalism is just about the only thing we've tried. God knows the hated, dreaded Obamacare is not exactly Marxism in action. It delivers millions upon millions upon millions of dollars into the hands of for-profit, profiteering, profit-centered, profit-motivated, profit-angled, profit-obsessed healthcare insurance companies. You know, the ones with the insurance or with the advertising campaigns and the disgustingly bloated budgets and all of that. You may be right, Jim. He gets his signals and his fillings. Ask Bruno. Oh, Bill in Cleveland getting us started, too. Rand Paul does not make me optimistic. Ray wants to know what my sneeze was. Clausutis! It's a passing bug. Lori Clausutis was the beautiful young woman who died mysteriously in Joe Scarborough's Panama City office. In the peak of health, she either fell and bumped her head or had a heart attack or something. They had to bring in a medical examiner who had been the medical examiner certified defrocked or whatever in Missouri to say, clearly, you know, she fell on her knife 37 times. So, just look up Lori Clausutis. You'll find out more than you. Well, you kind of need to know about it. Anytime you see Joe Scarborough sitting there pontificating away next to poor little Mika, you need to know that poor Mika may be sitting next to a murderer or an accessory to murder. You need to know that. But anyway, to get back to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Well, let's back up so that my digression will not make us too badly lose track.
Well, capitalism has not been tried yet in healthcare. Most of healthcare is government fixed prices, and there's very little capitalism. In fact,
most of healthcare is government fixed prices. Really? It was my understanding that when you have for-profit healthcare, let's say you've got an 80-20 policy. That means the health insurance company pays 80% of the bill, and you get stuck with 20%. What that usually results in is you winding up paying 40 or 50% because, well, lo and behold, the for-profit health insurance company, they negotiate a deal. Let's say the bill is $1,000. They would typically be responsible for $800 of that, and you'd be responsible for $200. But the healthcare company negotiates deals with healthcare providers, and they say, if you bill me $1,000, we're willing to pay $500. But guess what? That means that but you still get a bill for $200. So what is $200 expressed as a percentage of $700? It ain't no 20%. But Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, says the government is setting all the prices. No, the government does, to a certain extent, the same thing, but you know this, the same thing that the for-profit insurance companies do. The VA, for instance, negotiates rates. Medicare negotiates rates. But there is no law out there that says the for-profit healthcare companies have to pay the same rates. However, they do kind of like to do that because that means more money in the healthcare and health insurance company's pocket and more out of yours. Because, you know, like a good neighbor, you're in good hands. A lizard likes you. And Flo has a gizmo. Now, that's all car insurance, but you get my drift. Let's go back to Rand.
I'm a physician. In my practice, about 3% of my practice was capitalism. Those are the people who came in with high deductibles or paid cash.
3% of his practice were people who paid cash. That means 3% of his practice was probably never reported to the IRS. He likes that cash. He likes it a lot. Well, okay, so that's your experience, Rand. Let's see where it took you.
That marketplace worked because we did bid down prices on things that people came in and paid for.
We bid them down. Who did you bid with, Rand? You're an ophthalmologist and everything. Did you have five people with cataracts sitting in your office? And you say, I got 2,000 for a cataract, gonna be removed, $2,000, who'll give me $2,500 for a cataract, I got $2,500. Wait a minute, that's bidding it up, isn't it? Yeah, I don't see Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, bidding anything down. By the way, if you're new to the program, maybe you don't know why it is that I call him Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Well, like I said, a while back, he said that those government rates that he was complaining about, he said they need to be kept nice and high because he deserves to be comfortable. And that immediately reminded me of this. Yeah, Daffy Duck. Kind of hard to miss, isn't it? It's what he thinks about. Yeah, by the way, that little clip is from one of my all-time favorites, Alibaba Bunny. They pop into Alibaba's cave. Bugs comes out of the ground and says, "And here we are, Pismo Beach, and all the clams we can eat." And Daffy is not at all pleased until he sees what's in the cave. Piles and piles of gold and glittering jewels.
Underground. Hey, wait a minute. Since when is Pismo Beach inside a cave?
I wonder. I just think we should have turned left at Albuquerque. And then maybe a right turn at La Jolla.
You know, that right turn at La Jolla gets me every time.
Well, we can't be too far off. So if we,
It's mine, you understand? Mine! All mine! Get that in there! Down, down, down! Go, go!
Is this the perfect representation of a libertarian or an ultimate ultra right-wing Republican? It's mine, 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 down, down, down! I mean, if you didn't know better, you'd swear that maybe Daffy's last name was Romney or Paul or something.
No! Mine, mine, mine!
What's up, Duck?
I'm rich! I'm wealthy! Yahoo! I'm comfortably well off! Woohoo!
Yeah, that's... So, that's why Rand Paul... I thought of that too, Marty. How many patients do you think brought Rand Paul a chicken? how many patients do you think Rand Paul would accept a chicken from? He ain't Atticus Finch, and he ain't taking no bags and no hickory nuts in return for cataract work. Ron and Raleigh writing, what does this rube think? Does he think that getting open-heart surgery is like buying a car, something you do because it strikes your fancy? Impulse health care consumption? Right. But Ron, it's all a matter of the free market. And the unseen hand of the free market will heal us all. Irish Dave asking, capitalism hasn't been tried yet in healthcare? Is this a dogma whistle? Oh, very nice. Did Baby Doc get his own self homeschooled? Ophthalmology by correspondence predates Al Gore's invention of the internet tubes. I'm gonna have to grab that soundbite just to have it handy for whenever we need. Brandon, I'm socially secure. This is just the whole piece is nothing if not an expose of right wing hackery. You know, from the moment that Hassan catches up to Daffy, no, get the duck. He dug us in here. It's him. He did it. Because it's always somebody else's fault, right? But when it's time to get bailed out, guess who's back? Yeah, you know. Because they're like this. They don't want the government intruding in their lives unless the government, they need the government to save their bacon.
I'm assuming that Pismo Beach ain't quite this wide.
Help! 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 Save me, pal! Save me! Help!
Okay, so we've established the fact that the little libertarian needs help. But the question obtains, why? Why does he need help?
Hassan Shot!
Help!
Okay, man, back here. What's with you, anyway?
I can't help it. I'm a greedy slob. It's my hobby. Save me!
And there you have it. Libertarian ism in a nutshell. I can't help it. I'm a greedy slob. It's my hobby. Worshippers at the altar of the free market. You know how that works, right? Bill noting, the insurance companies, their good hands are deep in my pockets. Yeah, and they're sticky. Irish Dave getting into the spirit of things. Worst sunburn of my life was at Pismo Beach. Apparently them UV rays penetrate the overcast haze. Can't remember whether that was Hune or Huli. Pismo Beach and all the clams we can eat. I wonder whatever happened to all those that screwy duck. But Rand's gonna, we're just gonna pay cash, damn it. Preferably, being libertarian and all, preferably in gold bullion. Because we need to go back to the gold and silver standard. Remember, that's another big thing that he and the teabaggers love. Gold. Indeed. Now, here's the downside of paying in cash. There are a number of studies and surveys out there. I happen to have one right in front of me, as a matter of fact. Consumer-driven health plans, according to the Center for American Progress, that's another word they note for high-deductible health plans with savings accounts. The claim is, of course, that, well, you know, that means people get the good choice. Two-thirds of people prefer an employer-selected set of plans to an employer-funded account or choosing insurance on their own. Higher deductibles and cost-sharing discourage consumers from seeking any care. You know, back to what Ron said about, you know, I think I'm going to buy a car today. I think I'm going to get a heart bypass. High deductibles and cost sharing shift benefits to the healthy, but they shift costs to the sick. Oh, there's just lots and lots of facts, but Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist's primary concern is being comfortably well off. So therefore, he's not, you know, too bothered by any of that. Can you imagine what? Granted, he's just a first-term senator, but what kind of power would be handed to Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, if the Republicans get control of the Senate? Can you imagine? Just pick a committee. I mean, after all, look what happened when the Republicans took control of the House. You've got 1L Michelle Bachmann on the Intelligence Committee. You've got forcible rape Todd Akin on what, the Science Committee? Where would they put, what committee would Rand Paul sit on? Oh, maybe he could sit on something relating to the environment, because after all, he said that, I don't think anybody in eastern Kentucky is going to miss a few hills here and there. That was his response to mountaintop removal. Oh yeah, I got a feeling we're going to be busy tonight. The other thing I've got, a little sound bite from Ann Romney. You know, she just doesn't remind, there's just something not likable about that woman. Sandra just sent me a screen cap of a statistic. Romney 2011 tax rate versus worker who earns $60,000 a year. $60,000! Wow! Who can imagine? But still, $60,000. Sandra asks, pointedly, how can this be okay for most Americans who see this graph? And the graph, it's a simple bar graph. It shows that a worker who earns $60,000 a year pays a tax rate of 29.9%. Meanwhile, in 2011, Bishop Willard Romney, multi-googly millionaire, paid 14.1% because, well, you know, it was all capital gains, and I don't want to pay any more. I don't think I'd be fit to be president if I paid more than I was supposed to pay. Yeah, he said that. And of course, that, you know, that doesn't take into account the regressive taxes that we all have to pay that aren't based on, they're regressive. A food sales tax is nothing to a Romney, but it's, in many instances, a couple or 3 days food per month to somebody making $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, $60,000 a year. A gasoline tax? Sin taxes? Oh, we pay and we pay and we pay. But, you know, he said that 47% of America pay no taxes. I missed that part at the checkout line where there's no tax. We've got to finish off paying the property taxes on this fallen down little 80-year-old house on an acre of ground whose property taxes are higher than a coal baron's taxes are on a 1,000 acres of coal in the ground. Dr. John writing, and he says, what pisses me off about libertarians is they talk a lot about the wonders of capitalism, but don't even know what it is. Dr. Rand implies anyone who comes into his practice and came into his practice and didn't pay out of pocket wasn't engaging in capitalism. Absurd. Capitalism can be thought of in two ways: as a system in which a nation's providers of goods and services are entirely or mostly private citizens, or as a set of social relations mediated by a profit motive, wage labor, and market transaction. First, the capitalist in Dr. Rand Paul libertarian ophthalmologist's example is Dr. Rand himself, not the guy paying for it. Dr. Rand owns the business, profits from it, and presumably invests that profit back in the business. Capitalism in the first definition. In terms of the second sense, a set of social relations, we are all by definition operating within capitalism. It's impossible, or at least very hard, to exist within the modern United States without being part of the system. The fact that public money is redistributed by way of Medicare, for instance, doesn't mean it's not capitalism. It means the capitalist U.S. is functioning the way modern capitalist nations function. Pure laissez-faire capitalism, with no regulation by a functional state, has never really existed, and probably couldn't. Somalia doesn't count. See the functional part of the last sentence. Yeah, let's out Haiti, too. These guys style themselves the guardians and gatekeepers of capitalism, but they don't even seem to know what matters or what it means. And that's true. I mean, and I highly encourage you, go and read Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations. The capitalism that he was talking about was actually something that was progressive. It was a step away from the, if I have something, it means you have to have less of something, mercantilist motive that had preceded it, where people built businesses and invested their own risk in it. But now the capitalism of Ayn Rand, there's no risk. Even John Galtz just walks away, drops out of society, and sets up some sort of barter system in a hidden valley in Colorado. Hidden valley? Did he come up with a salad dressing? Ultimately, and I agree with Dr. John, everything he said here, ultimately, though, I think it's fair to say that right-wingers don't know a damned thing about capitalism. They don't want capitalism. They want socialism. Witness the Wall Street bailout. As has been said so many times on this program, they want socialism when their bacon's in the fire. Capitalism is what we get when we pay to bail them out. Capitalism was the credit default swap bubble, the housing bubble. That's capitalism. Run amok. But when everything collapsed, we gave them a good dose of socialism, and they're feeling all better now, and they're getting those bonuses again. Nice, huh? Ron and Raleigh writing, he says, what you don't understand, you got to remember, Bob, the $60,000 a year guy is not a job creator. Yeah, I know. So it is Friday on the front porch. Jump on in if you want to get involved. Hey, welcome to the program.
How you doing, Bob?
I'm well.
My name is Reggie. I'm from Decatur, Georgia. This is my very first time calling you.
Well, welcome.
I found you by accident recently. And I would just like to know, why do you have people like Dana Loesch, who said to these Muslims that Muslims don't have the right not to be offended by anybody or anything, and that she doesn't have to respect or tolerate
I mean, I can't speak for her. She's a right-wing POS.
Yes, she is.
But you know, my suspicion is that that you get that kind of stuff because they are right-wing POSs. Today, Geraldo Rivera on Fox said that Muslims are childlike. Did you happen to catch that one?
No, I did not.
Yeah, that was another great moment in Radio Rwanda broadcasting. Let's see, what's the direct quote here? Won't take me but a minute. He says, a big hunk of the world is behind a big hunk of the Muslim world is behind us in terms of political sophistication. They're easily enraged. And he says they have 100 years to evolve to catch up to anything like the sophistication of the West. We have to appreciate that. In some ways, they're almost childlike, dare I say it.
Yeah, and she also said that they are still offended by that damn innocence of Muslims. They can all go straight to hell, quoting Charles Krauthammer. She said that on her radio talk show last week.
Well, among other things, they would like to see that they've got a real itch, the right wing do, for World War III.
Oh, that itch. Oh, that itch. They're itching for World War III?
Yeah.
Brilliant.
They get real excited when other people go and fight and die in their wars.
Right. But they don't want to fight the wars that they created.
Oh, no. No, that's for us, the slimy, no good, not tax paying leeches of the 47% to go and do.
And she would give them all the one thing salute, tell them to go straight to hell.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, isn't that childish, immature, and juvenile? I mean, you know, she sounds like a fully overgrown teenage child, and she has two kids. What's that teaching her kids?
Well, what that's teaching her kids is that if everything holds up and she keeps making the big bucks, that they can behave that way someday too, and that a society will carry them on their shoulders as well.
Yeah, but aren't we supposed to teach our kids right from wrong, and that, you know, violence is never the answer to anything? And you know, what if they grow up to become bullies someday? They're going to wind up in three or four places. In a war, dead, in prison, or sitting on a shrink's couch.
Or running for president. Remember, Bishop Willard Romney was a bully. There was a kid with long hair there at Cranbrook Private School, day school, whatever it was. Kid with long hair, and Bishop Willard, before he became a bishop, didn't approve, so he and some of his pals tackled the new guy and shaved his head and, you know, called him things like faggot.
Yeah. Or they'll wind up in a mental institution. I'm surprised she's not there herself with the way that she acts on her radio talk show. It's like she has a Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde personality. On television, she's much more subdued, but on her radio talk show, you know.
Well, yeah. When you've got a terrestrial for-profit media right-wing radio show, all bets are off. You can be as crazy as you want to be.
And, you know, remember she said, I drop trial and do it too, and she's never been fired from either CNN or her radio talk show. You know, she's a CNN News.
Oh, yeah.
And CNN contributor. Yeah, she's a CNN News commentator and contributor. She's still on CNN and her own radio talk show, too. Although she said it on her own radio talk show and not on CNN, but still, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But you know, there's all kinds of that stuff. Let's see, who was it? Another CNN contributor, the guy from Red State, Eric Erickson. Remember him? Yeah, this is the guy who referred to the Democratic National Convention as the vagina monologues. Has he been fired from CNN yet?
No.
No. Can you imagine what would happen to a liberal or a progressive if one of those worked for CNN and said something like that? They'd be fired day before yesterday.
Yeah.
CNN would time travel to fire them before they could say it.
Right. And you'll have all the conservative radio talk show hosts smiling with glee and rubbing their sweaty, palmy hands in anticipation, grinning with glee and talking about it and making a field day out of it for like a year or so.
Right, because there's a double standard.
Yes, there is a double standard. And aren't these the exact same people who bitch about the liberal mainstream media?
Yeah, but that's, you know, that's just one of their paranoid fantasies that the for-profit media are by and large liberal. Yeah. Nothing could be further from the truth. If you spend any time at all clicking through the channels, how liberal is MSNBC? They give us Morning Joe. Well, right. They sell it to us. I mean,
right. Who else is on there? Hey, isn't there a person on there named S.J. Cup on MSNBC?
Is S.J. Cup on there?
S.J. Cup, yes.
S.E., yeah. Did they give her own show?
Yes, they have.
Ooh.
She comes in the afternoon, I think.
Well, you've probably gotten the idea by now that I don't spend a lot of time in front of the television.
Well, I don't either, but I watch movies and stuff, but, you know. I'm on my laptop most of the time. You know, I watch movies and stuff. But, yeah, I do listen to talk radio. I've been listening to it for 20 years. It used to be run by, human beings, you know, flesh, blood, and bone, not by mechanical robotic cyborgs, i.e. the Terminator, wearing three-piece suits.
You can plot when that came in. Tell me again your first name, please.
Reggie.
Reggie, okay. You can plot when that happened because it's you've got Ronald Reagan getting rid of the Fairness Doctrine, but then everything really went sideways in 1996 when Bill Clinton signed the Telecommunications Act into law that allowed the Clear Channels of the world to go and buy up every blessed radio license they could get their hands on the people's airwaves. And you know, they saturated us we were just bombarded with right-wing hate. And it's worth, I don't know if you know this or not, Reggie, but it's worth noting and telling folks, guess who one of the principal owners of Clear Channel is now, do you know?
Bain Capital?
There you go.
Bain Capital.
I wish we had prizes to give out. I would give you one.
Well, I have been listening and paying attention. As I said before, I've been listening to talk radio for 20 years. And like I said, it used to be run by human beings, made out of flesh, blood, and bone, not Terminator-like cyborgs who wear three-piece suits. You know, they have to be pre-programmed, and then reprogrammed, and they got their corporate hands up their asses, you know?
Yep.
Like, you know, making them like their personal hand puppets or parrots. You know, parrot what they say.
Exactly.
You know, brought the call letters and the numbers ad nauseum. And constantly as if,
well, they stay on message. I mean, you can follow whatever the message of the right wing is on any given day just by starting out with Morning Joe or whatever's on in the morning on the radio. And you can, I mean, they are, you know, because they're authoritarian and because they respond to marching orders, you can hear it develop during the day. I mean, Huckstrebe will have it, and Hannity will have it, and Limbaugh will have it, and it will have become absolutely psychotic by the time it gets to 4 p.m. or 7 p.m. Eastern time, and the savage wiener's gotten hold of it.
Yeah, and don't forget about Neil Bortz. He's still on the air, but he's retiring next year.
Yeah, that's the thing. I heard Bortz is quitting.
Yes, he is. Yes,
good.
And why you say that, Bob?
Oh, I find Neil Bortz revolting.
I'll be asleep when he's on. And I'll be asleep when he's on. And Eric Erickson has his show on WSB2 from 6 to 8.
Eric Erickson has a radio show?
Yes, sir. He does, from 6 to 8. I don't listen to him.
Oh, that's too much to bear.
You know, I'm on my laptop most of the day anyway. Not like everybody else. I am listening to live streaming radio, such as like I'm doing now with you.
We're awful glad that you are, and I'm glad you made the first call. I hope we'll hear a bunch more from you.
Yeah, I hope so too, Bob. But you know, you got these, like you said, you got these people on hate radio, like who spew out hate, and you wonder why what happened last week in Libya happened because of that movie, or. They say that movie never existed or didn't exist, you know.
Right. By the same token, they said it wasn't Glenn Beck's fault when he got a guy so enraged that he started marching for the Tides Foundation and was going to go kill somebody.
Yeah.
And, you know, lucky for us, he had to drink up some courage before he went, and consequently he got arrested beforehand. But he was ready to go and butcher the Tides Foundation because Glenn Beck had said they were progressive communist Nazis.
Right. And Dan alone substitutes for him sometime on his radio show and TV show.
Oh, I had no idea.
Yes, she does. She substitutes for him sometime. You know, she substitutes for him sometime. You know, but you know, you got people like that who, and she's an evangelical Christian.
Well, that explains a lot, doesn't it?
Yeah, she's evangelical Christian, you know.
Means she's waiting for Jesus to come back so she can do some real first-rate slaughtering of anybody who won't confess Christ.
Yeah, but she was a liberal until September 11th. She used to be a liberal until September 11th, and she's also a blogger or a so-called journalist. But don't you have to have a journalism degree in order to become a journalist? Because she dropped out of college a year before she got her journalism degree.
No. That's also covered under the general doctrine of IOKIYAR. It's okay if you're a Republican. I'm sure Eric Erickson doesn't have any sort of credentials to speak of either. Remember, Flush Flimball makes $50 million a year plus, and the only thing that ever recommended him to radio was the fact that his daddy owned a radio station. He dropped out of community college, and for a while there, he was selling hot dogs for the Kansas City Royals. There are no job requirements for right-wing radio, save for the requirement that one be conscienceless enough to just lie your rear end off for 3 hours a day. By the way, Reggie, you got a note in from our buddy Dr. John. He said, welcome to you, sir. Great to hear another informed voice. Please call often.
Well, tell him I said you're so very welcome. And she used to be a Tea Party member, but now she's a grassroots member. Yeah, she used to be a Tea Party member, now she's a grassroots member.
Right, because I guess the Tea Party got, what, did the Tea Party get too liberal for her? Oh, my God.
Perhaps it did. And speaking of organizations, Bob, she also accused Occupy Wall Street of being nothing but a bunch of barefoot, pot-smoking, drug-taking...
hippies?
Hippies. Pillaging rapist hippies. Yeah, she did use the word rapist in there. She did throw the word rapist.
Did she not figure out a way to make them all members of the new Black Panther Party? That's the one that I always get from right wingers. I actually shared while I was traveling last week. When I got in the shuttle at the airport in Madison, Wisconsin, I was in the hotel shuttle with a guy who was coming in from Jersey who wanted to tell me all about the dangers to America of the new Black Panther Party.
Right. She said that too on her radio talk show some time ago. But, you know, you got people out there who spew and spout hate, ignorance, bigotry, prejudice, racism, sexism, or whatnot. And another thing, she also attacked Sandra Fluck by saying that the Democrats started a war on women. She also attacks Sandra Fluck on her radio talk show.
Oh, that's... But again, that's an example of what I mentioned a few minutes ago. If you listen from morning till night, you will hear them stay on message. There were a couple of days there where right wing radio and TV was nothing but Sandra Fluck day in and day out with things talking points like, why won't she get a job? And it didn't matter if you were tuned into Flush Flimball or Hannity or some 932nd tier right wing talker in the fifth smallest radio market in America. They were all asking, why won't she get a job?
Or like Bill O'Reilly. I think he attacked her a few days ago. I think he's obsessed with her. He and John Stewart were going at it over her.
No, what Bill O'Reilly's obsessed with is John Stewart.
Why you say that, Bob?
Oh, because Stewart skewers him, and it just drives O'Reilly crazy.
Right. But she also said that Democrats built this whole entire war on women. You know, that's what she said on her radio talk show. And she's a woman herself, you know.
Right. Well, I mean, yeah, at least in theory.
I think, Yeah, I think that Bill O'Reilly just wants to have sex with some of your fluff. I mean, if he's so obsessed with us.
Well, you know, if I was Sandra Fluck, I would not be in the same town as Bill O'Reilly and any falafel.
Like I said, him and John Stewart were going at it over her a few days ago. And John Stewart said, what did those nuns or those rabbis or those Catholic nuns ever do to you when you were in Catholic school? I don't know if Bill answered that correctly or not, but that's what John Stewart said to me. What did those nuns ever do to you to make you become like this? Or make you act like this or become this way? To be who you are now. That's what he said to him. What did those nuns ever do to you, Bill? What did those nuns done to you? What have they done to you? That's what he said to Bill O'Reilly.
Oh, that's not surprising at all. Well, do call in any time that the spirit moves you. And like I said, we love first time callers here, and we love it especially when they become second time callers. Reggie.
Well, thank you so very much, Bob. And I will try and call. I will call you again.
All right.
I'll try to call you again. I will call you again.
Very good.
It's been on my mind ever since last week when she said that nobody has the right not to be offended in this country. And if they still are offended by that video, then they should all go straight to hell, quoting Charles Crosshammer. And that, well, she supports and defends Mitt Romney.
Right, and of course, I'm sure she would be outraged if anybody said anything about, you know, Romney's adherence to some of the more bizarre tenets of Mormonism, which we've discussed here, right?
Or attacking her on her evangelical Christianity, and she also defended and excuse Todd Aiken's legitimate rape comment, too, when she was on CNN.
But that's their job. They don't have to be fact-based. All they have to do is throw crap up against a wall and see if any of it sticks.
Right, and she's a blogger for Andrew Breitbart, the late Andrew Breitbart.
The gloriously late Andrew Breitbart, yes.
Yeah, she's the editor-in-chief of Breitbart.com. She's a blogger for him and a journalist, too, I guess.
Yeah, we all have to kind of guess at that. Thanks a lot, Reggie, and you have a good weekend, all right?
All right, you have a good weekend too, Bob.
All right, bye now.
All right, bye.
New caller, first-time caller, survived the call and everything. That's Reggie, and let's keep things rolling here. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so did you play that Ann Romney interview?
Not yet, I haven't, but I've got her queued up.
Oh, my God. I mean, I was just, you know, I mean, she is, these people are like some of the most distasteful people ever to grace the political stage in this country, I swear. And I just sent you that picture of that screenshot because, you know, I just think this is a huge lesson for people, because I don't think people really gave two shit about what rich people paid, but since this plutocrat is parading around the world stage, I just think it's a really interesting stat there. I'm not too sure how anyone who looks at that, who's just a worker, won't say why. Because, you know, your average person isn't versed in how capital performs as opposed to labor. All they see is some motherfucker paying 14% on millions of dollars, and they got to pay twice as much on a small fraction of it.
Yeah, and I mean, but you know, we kind of had this discussion the other day in the format of the number of people watching Fox, the number of people watching MSNBC, and the rest of the for-profit media. And, I mean, one, what are the odds that your average "Here Comes Honey Boo Boo" child viewer, and I'm sorry, that's just become the poster child for like the death of the culture to me, Sandra.
Yeah.
But what are the odds of your average "Here Comes Honey Boo Boo" child viewer ever seeing that graph?
I know. Well, no, I mean, that when I started looking at those ratings, yeah, I was. I mean, I knew it was low for the cable, but I was completely taken aback by the big three news. It's like, yeah, they get a few million, but it still is a drop in the bucket. And you know, you gotta ask. You know, well, shit, no wonder. You know, this democracy is swirling down the drain on some levels, because if people have no clue about anything except for Honey Boo Boo, yeah, they're not going to know the difference until the checks stop coming, if I may go there.
Exactly, or we might say until the cable goes off.
Well, you know what I'm saying, though. I mean, you know, I just think that because people conflate their Medicare and Social Security with some entity that I'm not sure of because they don't think it's from the government. But when these people get in and completely wreck that revenue stream and transfer payments for people, then they'll know. But, I mean, by then it'll be too late. But anyway, and also, I also think when people are talking about, oh, Romney is in trouble, I'm like, no, you need to convince the 47% that they're part of the 47% first.
Oh, dear. Yes, yes, absolutely true. Oh, no, no, I'm not one of those people. I'm one of the people he likes.
No, you know, I mean, I'm being a little bit facetious, kind of, hopefully, but I do think there's, you know, as it is with Americans, everyone's middle class, you know what I mean? No matter if you make $20,000 a year or $500 million a year, you're still middle class.
You right, know? Even if you haven't ordered off of anything except the dollar menu at McDonald's in 8 years.
Yeah,
no, I'm middle class. I'm middle class.
Yeah, so that's a hard nut to crack. And although Romney's doing a damn good job because he is failing, you know, one of the major tests in this country, which is likability. I mean, say what you want about Bush, he was able to corner that really insipid indicator in American politics. This fool right here, he is so unlikable. That alone might sink him more than anything else, which is sad statement to the state of our discourse. But at this point, I don't care what sinks him. He's a disaster to get in, though. From a policy position, my God, it's too scary.
But I mean, there are signs, and you know, you hope they mean something, Sandra. Eddie Munster, you know, the love child of Ayn Rand and Eddie Munster, Paul Ryan. Talked to the AARP today in New Orleans.
And he was booed throughout.
Yeah, they booed him. They said, go home, get out of here, you suck, you know.
It was amazing. And what's really interesting is that I do think these people, him, Romney, they have bought their own BS hook, line, and sinker. So he looked crazy in that video, like, oh, how is this happening? Like, somehow he's surprised.
Did he look crazy? Now, this is just one of those compare and contrast essay questions, Sandra, but did he look, who looked goofier, Paul Ryan at the AARP or Bishop Willard Romney with his brown face on?
Well, no, you know what? I don't even know about that story. That shit is so wrong. I mean, are they serious?
Go look!
You know what?
And the thing is, the screen cap, one, you can compare his face from that to other, you know, other appearances, and you say, well, okay, I mean, you know, but the lighting's different, and photography, you know, changes things, and but then you look at the very photo of Bishop Willard Romney sitting there in that Univision interview, and his face is as brown as toast, and his hands are as pale as a ghost. Because they're right there, because he's got his hands out, and you can see his hands, and I'm looking at mine, and my hands are actually darker than my face.
So that was some reverse OJ, wasn't it?
No kidding.
Remember how they did OJ? All of a sudden that fool was as black as night.
Yeah. they've blacked up President Not Sure a few times too.
Oh yeah, they will. Yeah, but I mean,
and I don't know if you heard, you know, the one thing that keeps sticking in my mind is that little quote I saw from the Charleston Gazette when I was walking down Pennsylvania Avenue in D.C. I guess it was last Monday, and I read, and this is the Republican Governors Association ad that's running on behalf of the right wing lunatic that's running for governor here, and the quote that said, Obama promised our children change, but in the last 4 years, that promise has darkened. And I just said, what?
Oh, man. Well, I mean, I just, you know, I have to say, you know, that whole exposure of the video thing was interesting anyway, because, I mean, didn't we already run that? I mean, you and I on this show, didn't we run that Chinese one ages ago?
Yeah, we kind of did.
What?
Yeah, we did.
Because I was tripping. I'm like, not that. I mean, that's fine because the person only released a few bits and pieces. I'm thinking that is the same shit, ain't it?
Almost verbatim.
Right. Anyway, but the thing is that God, how hideous! How bad did he look coming out with that gibberish? Because that ain't make any sense what he's talking about.
Permanent. Well, it's like the hissy I had last night, or half a hissy. Permanent solution, really? Talking about permanent solutions, and then says it's not like we're going to round you up and put you in camps or anything. I mean, he said that. And in front of one would assume was a fairly friendly South Florida audience, because generally speaking, the Cuban emigre population trends right, whereas the rest of the Latino population trends left. So those should have been friendlies. And he's sitting there talking about permanent solutions and rounding up people and putting them in camps.
No, I mean, he's an idiot on top of everything else. But, I mean, he is just some horrible plutocrat who will never have access to the common touch. At least, Roosevelt, both the Roosevelts had some grasp of the common touch. This man, I mean, it's just a joke. And what's really disturbing, though, is the sort of avalanche up to $5 billion is being flooded in this election. So it isn't a democracy, because that's outrageous, that amount of money, you see. So no matter how bad of a candidate he is, I'm never going to say it's over at all. Not with that kind of money flowing freely in this country right now. No way.
I don't think you can, and of course, there's, like I said, it's multi-layered. There's turn off the voters, turn away the voters, and then if they actually get in and vote, you're voting on some squirrely-ass machine.
Yeah, so I just think, whatever, the smugness, they need to take a back seat on that. I'm not buying any of it, because the amount of money, I hate to keep sounding like a broken record, but that number is staggering, Bob, $6 million. For an election cycle. My God.
Yeah, billion, isn't it?
Yes, I'm saying six. I'm sorry, did I say million? Yeah. 6 billion.
Well, no, it's hard to make the billion come out of your mouth because it's a mind-boggling number. I mean, how many budgetary programs are there in the United States government that cost $6 billion?
Well, no, but it's incredible, but you can make the connection to the vast amount of money that's been vacuumed from everybody else to the rich. And now they're trickling it down on us, all right, in the form of buying our democracy.
And there's another layer of that to consider. These are all media buys that are going into media conglomerates that are largely centralized in the hands of six massive corporations. It's upward wealth transfer again. Because the owners of the stations, the owners of the publications, they're the ones who benefit the most. I mean, there's $6 billion that is being transferred as we speak into the coffers of media outlets that are right-wing in the first place.
And run by the same 0.0% that's investing. So it's just this sort of vicious circle. And, we the people are just going to be hung out to dry, because... You notice how the candidates, they're not on a road nowhere near as much as they were in past elections, because they're too busy soliciting money from the filthy rich. Obama, he's at a fundraiser every minute of the day. I mean, I just think that...
And has to be.
Well, it's just... No, but see, these people give away all this money. It's an investment, and they're going to want a return on it. And it's a really good investment, because... They don't have to give all that much,
Well, look at that ad that you sent along last night, and I had played the audio earlier in the program. Now, that's not connected to, that's not technically connected to a political campaign, but, Jesus, a Benjamin Netanyahu ad that, tell Barack Obama to bomb Iran now, and they're running in South Florida?
That has to be one of the low points of this election so far. I was... Shaking my head.
I mean, has anything? That's like, That is as if the 1964 Johnson Daisy ad, which only ran once, was paid for by a foreign power. I mean, no, this.
And that was run off the air because it was deemed whatever. It only had a one-time airing.
Right.
There is no accountability or checks at all. This is a free for all where we have some. What did that idiot call him? The leader of the Jews? Do you remember that?
Yeah.
I mean, we have the leader of the Jews telling us what? Giddy up! We need you to go to war for us. What in the world?
And I mean, the presumptiveness of it. You know that they would tell us. I mean, this is still a pretty big nation, and we're still pretty powerful, but we can be told to go to war?
No, and then we have Radio Rwanda just lying, saying that Obama was meeting pirates, but he was meeting pirates in 2009. Have you heard that? Have you heard that?
No, what?
Yeah, no, they were trying to say that, I guess he was, I don't know if it was some sort of show or something, but they had a clip of Obama talking to some sort of, you know, pirate show, whatever it was. But they tried to say this was happening now. But it happened in 2009. So they were taking a clip from 3 years ago and saying this is what Obama was doing now. He didn't have time to meet Netanyahu, but he could do this.
Oh, my God.
How blatant is that? That's what I mean. It's just, it's just sort of mind-numbing. So that's why I'm concerned about, I don't care how many times this Mitt Romney falls flat on his face. It's a bit of a worry, but he is a god-awful candidate, though. My goodness.
He's a nightmare, and getting back to what you originally mentioned, so is his wife.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I thought Peter Godbold, our old buddy Peter Godbold, sent me a note earlier today saying, you know, I thought I was going to pass out when I heard Ann Romney's comments, and you know, sent along the link, and I went and I holy cow! So if you don't mind, Sandra, I've got this queued up, and I'd like for folks to know what we're talking about.
Oh yeah, no.
The bishop's wife, gave an interview to Radio Iowa, and in it. She opined on this, that, and the other thing. Prior to what you're going to hear, she had said that after the 2008 campaign, she sent a video. Now, this was just weird, Sandra. And for the, you know, for the married folks out in the audience, or people with significant partnerships or whatever, when you need to get a message to your beloved, do you send them a video? Because Ann Romney says that after the 2008 campaign, she was so disgusted, she sent a video to Willard to tell him that she would never go through something like a presidential campaign again. Now, there's some psychology at work here. What kind of sort of domineering household must he run that she can't just say to him, Mitt, no more?
Well, she had to pound out them five kids. And he has that, like Mike Malloy mentioned, which I thought was a great point, which has been lost. That man had that bitch out every day, and she's, what, a breast cancer survivor? And she has MS, which is all related to stress?
Yeah.
She got that woman out nonstop? It ain't nice.
No.
But
she's a good Mormon wife, and she has to obey her husband, or, you know, she might get a whooping on the next planet.
Ew.
Yeah, I know. So anyway, that's all what goes down before what you're about to hear. And this, well, there's a little lead-in, and then you'll hear the question that the interviewer asks. So here we go. Radio Iowa, Ann Romney.
And it's an amazing thing if you just make up your mind, and you know it's coming, and you expect it, and you just say, I know who he is. I know why we're running.
I have to interrupt. Is that a little bit of Shades of Denny Green?
Too bad we don't have no good. Hey, could splice that shit up. It'd be great. That's great.
He is who I thought he is.
Oh, my God.
Okay, we'll go back to it now.
Putting my head down, and we're going forward. And that's what I'm doing.
It's one thing to be criticized by the other side, but recently there have been criticism from fellow Republicans, Peggy Noonan saying time for an intervention, Bill Kristol saying things like arrogant and stupid. I mean, what do you say to your fellow Republicans who are...
Stop it. This is hard. You want to try it? Get in the ring. This is hard. And, you know, it's an important thing that we're doing right now, and it's an important election. And it is time for all Americans to realize how significant this election is and how lucky we are to have someone with qualifications and experience and know-how to be able to have the opportunity to run this country.
Does that just make you want to scream, Sandra?
Well, it's just, I can't, you know, it's like, you know what?
You people?
Yeah, it's like, you know, you don't know how lucky you are that you can get someone of our caliber, you know, blah, blah, blah. And it's just kind of just mind-numbing. And I'm like, where's she at? I mean, I understand that the U.S. is going off the rails, but...
I mean, is there any doubt where she would have been, say, in Paris in 1793?
Well, a head in a basket?
Yeah.
I mean, you know?
People don't understand how lucky you are
exactly.
to have us throwing you crusts.
I mean, she is unbelievable. Ann Romney is just, I don't even know what to say about her, except her plane almost crashed this evening. You heard about that?
Yeah, she had to make a forced landing. Jim was just mentioning that to me in an email. What the hell happened?
It was a CNN. I just saw that, no injuries or nothing, but it was some sort of emergency landing in Colorado. And I'm like, yeah. I don't trust none of that. Sorry.
No.
Anything to distract. They're desperate. This fool releasing...
Anything to make them likable.
Yeah, no. I mean, you know...
I mean, if the unthinkable happened and they actually won in November, would the next statement from Ann Romney be, "You like me. You really, really like me."
Exactly. Or maybe she'll have a flare-up, a health flare-up.
Well, you're so not going to be okay with this. Jim just dropped an email in the box here. He said, I got an ad for an Ann Romney inflatable doll today. No, really.
Oh, no. Well, listen. I mean, anyway, they're terrible. But on to this other thing that I must mention, because I was just like, you know what? This shit is just sort of upside down world. Okay, so the other black woman who screams even more than I do, Susan Rice, Ambassador Rice, is up there talking about it was spontaneous, the attack in Libya, and you know it wasn't a terrorist attack. And then all of a sudden the White House is coming out with it was a terrorist attack, and I'm like, well, how is that spontaneous? And there's a safe house. So the safe house was spontaneous, too?
Wait, there's a... Well, that's the damnedest thing. I've never heard of a spontaneous safe house.
Right. The safe house was attacked, too. And it's just kind of like, you know, and then between her and Hillary, how could they do that when we liberated them? I'm like, what planet?
Wait, what?
These people on. Yeah, she made a statement a couple of days afterwards saying... It's incredible that it would happen in Libya after what we did for them. I'm not lying. So these people are bubbled out, and they're killing brown people all over the place. And then when they had these explosions of protests, like in Pakistan today, where 19 people were killed.
Yep.
Well, people need to understand that the government okayed today. Today was some sort of respect our prophet day, and they sort of sanctioned for the people to run out and, you know, make noise about it, and it just turned hellish. But, you know, have you ever thought about, well, why the Muslims are allowed to do that kind of protest, but they can starve and they can't do nothing else? They got to have a release valve.
Yeah, and they ain't got, you know, they don't have Honey Boo Boo Child, and they don't have the NFL.
So the sort of, you know, the West with their disfiguring Muhammad and all the other sort of blaspheming things they do about that just gives these tyrants a release valve for their poor put upon people.
Take their minds off not having any food for a little bit,
or able to collectively bargain, or on and on and on,
or so, you know, the shoe factories that burn up and have the windows barred.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I mean, it's all kind of interconnected, because you don't need to forget that the U.S. is doing debt forgiveness for Egypt, you know, and that's all IMF, World Bank shit. So, you know, don't be fooled by some stupid film, and then all these people are having some sort of explosion. But I will say, I don't understand with the French. Why the fuck would they just do this magazine with these obscene cartoons in this environment? I don't even understand why.
And it's beyond me, too.
But in the meanwhile, though, funny how the French will allow that shit to come out, but they do a court injunction on them parasitical royals because that bitch laid out with her top off? Please. You know, Kate Middleton is...
Yeah. No. I mean, I think that's a stunning display of where the priorities are.
Keep your top on, idiot. Those are the most they have the most risk-free existence imaginable. I am so sick of those parasites. But the French is going to protect that privacy and allow this madness to come out on... You know what I'm saying? So, I don't know. That just popped in my mind because I was thinking, you must be kidding.
I saw both of those stories and see there's a larger conversation that needs to take place here, and I was trying to get my head around it, and I talked a little bit with our buddy Harry about it, and that is that this presumption that that insightful speech that should be presumed to be free speech until proven otherwise. I mean, you know, I mean, this stupid movie, Sandra, they meant to do what they did. That's why it was all over that Pamela Geller's website. You know, Atlas Shrugged.
Yeah, no, she's hideous, yeah.
This was cause and effect. You put it out there, people go nuts, and then you say, see how nuts those people are?
Well, no, and then you have Obama talking about, we're going to bring them to justice. And you're like, Obama, you cannot even utter those words anymore with you killing folks every day.
Yeah, did I read something the other day? No. We may or do have a boatload of Marines in Yemen.
Yeah. There's all sorts of escalation going on now. And you have Israel doing the largest maneuvers in like three decades in the Golan Heights today. And I was just like, you know?
It doesn't lend itself to anything resembling a sense of comfort.
Yeah, but, you know, and also I was really disappointed that they, you know, found some darkie to reverse the injunction on the National Defense Authorization Act.
Yeah, I saw that, and it was, but that's, you know, that's just the trip upward through the court system, isn't it?
No. It was a permanent injunction, and then the Obama administration found, you know, this other judge to reverse that until it can be presented again later in the month. But it's back on again. This is the point that I wanted to make.
Jesus.
So, I mean, I just, you know, this just goes on. You know, I don't care about Mitt Romney on some levels. It's like, in the meanwhile, Obama and his administration, they're desperate to be able to detain folks without any due process. Why is that? Why is it so crucial, and where they're going to fight until the bitter end to get the ability to destroy all our constitutional...
Well, I think at some point Barack Obama is going to be forced out into the public square, at which point he's going to have to go all Ozzy Osbourne and bite the head off a bat or something, just out of that ongoing attempt or ongoing desire to show the right wing that he's not a big sissy. And I mean, but by the same token, I think all occupants of the executive office like to have that kind of untrammeled power.
Well, no, but Obama or whoever had the nerve to say that by denying that provision, prevents his ability to be executive. And it's just like, well, no. It's no implied or no kind of power.
What happened to the check in Checks and Balances?
That's what I'm saying. No, I mean, it's, you know, and I realize that this issue, you know, isn't really a big deal for most folks, but this is like becoming my pet whatever. I'm just sort of horrified that the executive is gathering this sort of power, and that the progressives are like, you know, pretending that it's not happening. I don't know.
Well, I can tell you this much, Sandra. One of the things that was somewhat pleasing to me while I was out at Fighting Bob Fest was, first of all, there was a giant model of a drone right by the stage from StopTheDrones.org or whatever it was. And there were more than a couple of people who mentioned the drone business and said, this needs to stop.
Well, I mean...
So that was a big old room full of upper Midwest progressives. And so the issue is not completely gone.
Yeah, well, no, and it's going to be coming back with a vengeance, because I can't remember the bill number, but they basically, you know, have allowed the, you know, commercial air to be, you know, dominated by these drones over the next decade. There's no protection for our airspace now. So you're just going to see an explosion of these things being used domestically. And I just think people are, you know, blissfully unaware of how
dangerous. Oh, you think, and let's look at it this way. If whatever the Obama administration is doing, and this, Sandra, is not by way of excuse making. I don't want to be taken that way. But whatever the Obama administration is doing, if there's a Romney administration, it will be tenfold.
Oh, no, exactly. No, that's true. And which gets to the you know, yeah, no, I'm not disagreeing with you. But the point is, though, the drone thing is going to be a huge problem for regular folks. You know, if they get out of line, I mean, think about how it can be used. It can watch you. It can be weaponized.
Oh, it turns into Santa Claus. It sees you when you're sleeping. It knows when you're awake. It knows if you've been bad or good. So be good, for goodness sake.
I mean, it has that. And if you couple that with the usual privatization of everything in this country, you're going to have, you know, various corporations in charge of watching everything you do.
Yeah, once it gets good and outsourced. Just had a note come in from Darlene under the subject line, justice for those who killed our ambassador. And she observes, when Obama says he's going to bring someone to justice, that's code. I can't help but think of Osama bin Laden. Remember how Osama bin Laden was brought to justice? I believe that when Obama says brought to justice, he's really saying he's just going to kill him.
Well, and especially... It really is just like she said, because who are they going to kill in Libya? Are there camps there waiting to be bombed? The place isn't, you know, little secret for everyone. It's total anarchy in Libya. It's like Iraq during the 2004-2006 period. Remember that period?
I do.
And it's worse because there's this amazing amount of weapons that were not taken when the NATO finished. So, you know, Libya has the potential to be unbelievably violent. So, you know, I don't know what to say. It's not good.
Well, we are slowly but surely stretching ourselves thinner than we are able to stretch, are we not?
Oh, yeah, I don't know. I just think that, you know, Libya is not good. Syria is even worse, if that's possible. And Israel is just like a sort of cornered animal, which we need to be worried about, because the reality is that...
And I don't want Israel to feel that way.
Well, no, but the reality is that they're there and they're surrounded by enemies. We can agree on that, right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I heard a really good analysis that it's more of a psychological tip now, too, because most Israelis got dual passport, and if they think some giant country like Iran is now armed nuclear, you know, nuclear power, well, they're going to be giddy up and going to Brooklyn. I mean, so Israel has a lot at stake. So I think a lot of it is psychological. You know, they're trying to win the demographics war, and they're losing.
And by extension, I mean, that Netanyahu's recent behavior, one, remember, you know, he's one of Romney's old cronies, you know, back from their days at, what was it, Bain Consulting or whatever.
Well, he's crazy, though. Yeah. I mean, he's not even rational.
No, he's, you know, everybody says, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad, that man's crazy.
Bibi Netanyahu is not playing with a full deck either.
No, because if you know, I don't know if you heard this, but I thought this was perfect, because this fool was saying the same thing in, wait for it, 1992, that the Iranians were 6 months away from, you know, being armed with an atomic bomb. 92.
Yeah, no, this guy's out of central casting for Dr. Strangelove.
So, but nevertheless, though, it's not like it's not impacting his poor, unfortunate country. You know, if they all think they're surrounded by a bunch of people who want to get them, much like the rich is in this country, then it's a problem.
It's a problem when they say it's a problem.
Yeah. You know, I mean, the thing about the other thing about the Romney thing is how put upon him and his seem to be. Did you notice that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, the first thing I thought about when I heard that Ann Romney clip is, how would you like to be the help in the Romney house? And maybe drop a piece of china or something.
Well, no, but the rich are just too weird, because how are you going to be talking that way crazy when you have, you know, the help serving you, and you think, what, they're not going to notice what's being said? They're so weird, those...
Well, consider, who dropped the dime with the video?
Well, of course, that's what I mean, you know. I'm sure it was... I bet it was the help.
I even hate that phrase.
Oh, no. I say it, you know, tongue-in-cheek. I think it's disgusting, the whole thing. But what's more disgusting is, you know, just how completely bubbled out those people are.
You know, we used to make jokes about Laura Bush hollering for Lupe to bring her a Darvon and a margarita.
And a cigarette? Oh, is that a cigarette?
Yeah, well, a Darvon, a margarita, and a smoke.
Right.
Lupe! But I think it's probably... It's probably even worse in Shea Romney, because them people are sober, and they're this mean and this disconnected, stone cold sober. You want some sort of an intervention just to get whoever's working for him out of the house.
No, but I mean, there are so many reasons why you need to have that top these top tax rates. And another one of the main thing is how these people operate. They're horrifying. They got to be put in check. They can be ugly and awful in their own little bubbles. They got to be reined in, though, and taxing them at high rates is the only way to do that. I'm sorry.
In some ways, for their own good.
Yeah. Otherwise, we're heading down the Rome when the highways ended and. The population went from 1 million to 40,000. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know.
It's not that long a trip, Sandra.
Oh, my God. So that's what, you know, worries me, because these people, they're not fit to govern, you know?
Not by any stretch of the imagination. They're an offense to the idea of governance. I think it was Philip who pointed out by an email last night or night before that these people rail against the idea of government until they can get their feet in the trough, and then, as long as they're getting their check, government's real good to have.
Well, I mean, Madison wanted to sort of orchestrate an aristocratic solution to presenting a democracy. I mean, let's be honest, that's kind of what our whole...
Well, that's what the Constitutional Convention was about.
Top-down revolution's about. I mean, they saw the masses as a present danger. But I don't think that, you know, this is what they had in mind. I do think that Jefferson did see the sort of poisoning effect of having a plutocracy like this.
And I think Franklin saw it too. But by the time that the debate is being had between Madison and Hamilton, all bets are off, because they were both basically on the same side arguing the finer points of plutocracy.
Yeah.
There was nobody, and, you know, Dr. Bill pointed it out one evening, that anybody who spoke up against the Constitution or spoke in favor of the Articles of Confederation was immediately just sleazed into oblivion. And Dr. Bill's particular expertise is the Maryland contingent in the Constitutional Convention, And one of those guys spoke out, and the next thing you know, it was all over the newspaper. He's a drunk.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, we've had our, what was the one guy, Morris, Governor Morris?
Governor Morris, yeah.
Yeah, we have those types, you know, all the way up and down, you know, our history. So, but I just think that there's nothing to check what's going on now. You know, it's really unfortunate. I'm not too hopeful about, you know, 10 years down the road what things are going to be looking like.
No, I used to wonder what America would look like 100 years down the road. Now I'm like you. I'm just curious what it looks like in 10.
Well, when you think about the idea that, you know, models are being blown to bits with climate change, and we're now looking at no ice in the Arctic in the summer in, wait for it, 2015, I'm like, oh, shit. You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
This is starting to overtake my thinking now, this whole climate madness, because of, you know, like I always say, your kids and the twins. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
And all the other little ones that I know.
You should have heard Bill McKibben out there in Wisconsin. He got up, and the first thing he did was apologize, Sandra. He said, you know, I hate to be the guy who comes on and just bums everybody out, but... And delivered some, you know, some cold hard facts. Now, naturally, you're not going to see a lot of McKibben on, you know, the for-profit media, because the portion of our population that spends its time amusing itself to death does not want to be reminded that the condemned eat heartily. But everybody who's involved with this is doing all they can to stand at the top, you know, stand at the top of the steeple and scream their heads off.
Well, we already got 30 years of climate commitment right under our belt already, and every year it just increases, you know, climate commitment, whereas 30 years is already, we can't do anything about it. And it's just going to get worse and worse, but it looks like from articles that I've read. And
well, I forget who it was that brought it up to me on the show the other night, that the UN is now going to give carbon credits for people who burn coal and build coal-fired power plants. I thought my head was going to come off.
I mean, but that solution is so non-workable, and it doesn't work. And we're so far along to climate catastrophe at this point, from what I can tell. Well, from what little I know about it, it sounds like, there's some... In the next, you know, 20 years from now, we're going to be in some deep... Just 20 years from now.
Well, and that's, you know, ultimately, that's one of those intolerable, not intractable, but intolerable questions, Sandra. How... When it finally does reach American shores, and by that I mean when it's not just increased hurricanes, when it's not just, you know, F5 tornadoes, when it's not just weird-ass land hurricanes blowing across Appalachia, but when things that are happening in the developing world or the ignored world, if you will, you know, when there's no food on the grocery store shelves, what happens here? The American people, at least here in the early decades of the 21st century, are not big into community and mutual sacrifice. It's going to be, I got mine, screw you, all the way down to the last damn bean.
Yeah, and I also think that, you know, Canada might want to build up their defenses, because I can see nice gated communities built up all over Canada after we've invaded it and destroyed it, because Canada is going to be looking a lot like the U.S. is looking from the models I've looked at.
Well, what did that guy from Shell say? If we can't grow crops here, we'll grow them somewhere that we can.
Right. Not only that, but I mean, can't you just see the way things are configured now? You know, the government considerable resources will be turned to protect the rich. You know?
Oh yeah.
You know, they'll have enclaves for them and theirs. You
know, they're underwater bubble cities, and
who knows? I mean, I don't know. I don't mean to be completely.
No, it's time. It's time for a weekend double feature of Logan's Run and Soylent Green, Sandra.
Oh, I know, but I wanted to mention, but no, the movie I'm looking forward to, which is completely unrelated, is that Daniel Day-Lewis playing Abraham Lincoln. I will be there for that movie.
I'm real intrigued.
That looks amazing.
Because now this is not the same, and I don't know what it is with Lincoln movies, but this is not the same as the Lincoln movie that Ridley Scott's brother was making based on O'Reilly's fantasy of the assassination of Lincoln, is it?
No, this is Spielberg.
Yeah. So yeah. It's got to be compelling, and I mean Daniel Day-Lewis could brush his teeth for 2 hours and get nominated for an Academy Award for it. I'm still not over There Will Be Blood.
Yeah, no, I don't know what, you know, what story or novel is based on or who wrote the screenplay. It may be interesting to investigate, but listen, I can see that movie and the vampire slaying Abe Lincoln too. I'm all over that.
I didn't know how to feel about that one.
Well, it looked sort of amusing. I don't know. I suppose it's a bit, yeah.
Well, I mean, it comes from the same school of thought that gave us, Sense and Sensibility and Zombies, or...
Right.
Yeah.
But anyway, I mean, you know, like, I saw the trailer of the Daniel Day-Lewis one, and, you know, it looked well interesting. They got some, you know, hard-hitting powerhouse actors in it, so...
Yeah. When does that come out? Any idea?
I think it's November.
It'll be worth it.
Yeah, so I that was sort of on my list, and I'll let you go. But the other thing I want—did you happen to look at another Mormon, Steve Young, talking about the replacement refs? I'm like, whoa!
Oh, that was—I don't know if that much truth has been spoken in the sporting world in eons.
No, and it was funny how some people were trying to shut him up in that conversation, too. Really interesting exchange there, and Steve Young went up, in my estimation, three or four times. I couldn't believe it.
He did, and he started it by saying the NFL doesn't care about the quality of officiating because they've got a brand that people won't turn away from.
And he actually said union busting.
Yeah. Yeah, he did. And the next day... Along comes, oh God, who was it on Mike and Mike the following morning, on Monday morning, no, Tuesday morning after the Monday night football fiasco. Did you watch that?
No, I didn't. You know, I just sort of didn't have a chance to catch up with all my football. Was that a disaster?
Oh, I thought, here we go. It's the Broncos. It's Peyton. We'll see how he is. And, the Atlanta Falcons are no slouch.
Yeah, they did him over with that amoeba. They called it, amoeba defense or whatever? But
yeah.
Anyway.
And he threw, three interceptions in the first quarter, Peyton Manning did. But the thing that stole the show was that the officiating was, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was unbearable. I mean, it was awful. I mean, it looked like, I don't know what high school the conference these guys came from, but they were terrible.
Well, no, but they're back again this week, though. We're going to be subjected to it again because they still haven't come to an agreement. I heard this afternoon.
No, and that's kind of what what Steve Young was getting at, and Chris Carter. It was Chris Carter, I think.
Yeah, well, Chris Carter, he will. Yeah, it was.
And
anyway,
both of them said, you know, the NFL management has no incentive.
They don't care
to settle. Chris Carter was good. You got to look up this clip. He had on his NFL jacket, and it had the logo on it, you know, the shield.
Mm.
And he said, Roger Goodell's all the time telling the players, you know, don't go out and get busted for DUI. Don't beat up your girlfriend. Protect the shield. And he's pointing at that NFL logo shield on his jacket. And he said, protect the shield, protect the shield. And he looked straight in the camera and he said, Commissioner Goodell, about time you protected the shield.
Oh, no, because it's like, you know, the safety issue, you know, the product, all of it is real shaky with these people who really don't know what's going on. But they don't want to give... billions of dollars, and they can't pay these people. I mean, it's really disgusting. But at any rate, I was quite impressed with Young, because I just thought, you know, I didn't know what to think of him. I know he's a lawyer, you know, but I realized that he was, you know, so down with the workers, so to speak.
Well, I mean, he knows a little bit about head injuries.
Well, he's a player, so players. Yeah, they seem to have some radicalization just by being a player, from the sounds of it. Because more and more of them just sound like, you know, left wing crazies. I bet they was twisting some arms at ESPN while that was going on, huh?
Oh, there had to be some all kinds of unhappy. And the only thing, and you know what was funny was. For the sports fans out there, lo and behold, when the Steve Young thing and the Chris Carter thing start blowing up, along comes the Jonathan Vilma story and the affidavit, and it just swept all of the complaints about the officiating aside. As we talked, you know, suddenly everybody had to be talking about the so-called bounty case.
Yep.
But by the way, the Jets are at Miami this Sunday.
Oh, shoot. You know, I'm still laughing at what the Giants did to the Panthers. I'm like, oh, shit.
Yeah. You know, I don't know. The little Eli may be going after that third ring.
Yeah, no, listen.
You know, and you know what? To give your big brother a noogie with three of them diamond-encrusted Super Bowl rings on your finger and he ain't got but one, that's going to be a noogie that hurts.
Well, no, but you know what? Miami, that should be a fairly straightforward game for the Jets, I would think, right?
Yeah, but did you notice this past Sunday that number 15 came into the game for the Jets?
He didn't do nothing.
He took off on a play and peeled off 10-15 yards. And that's,
he's not going to get that guy's job, though. I don't know. Who knows?
I mean, but I thought it was weird that, you know, they're not in terrible jeopardy, but you know, here comes Tebow.
Yeah, well, I guess they see it as you know, value, fan value. I mean, I really don't know.
Did you catch the Tebow story of the week?
No, you know, I've been out of it. No, what was?
Dateline New York, CBS New York, September 18th. Tebow, quote: "I haven't ruled out running for office once I'm through with football."
Wow. God, I'm sure. Oh, listen. Okay, I got it. Oh no, so it's going to be President Tebow when the girls are of age, huh?
I wouldn't. Yeah, and he will have the full force and effect of the entire right-wing evangelical community behind him. Then again, when he's through with football, hell, that may be next season.
Well, no, yeah, he, yeah, well. So basically you're saying that he's not going to go away.
I don't know. I just I imagine that every Jets fan in America is just praying for the good health of Sanchez.
Yeah, no, for sure. But, you know, just not to jump around too much, but what do you think of my UC Berkeley there? Cal didn't do too bad. I mean, they lost, but they kind of gave that horrible smug, what's his name,
Urban Meyer, yeah.
I can't stand him. But, you know, they gave them a little bit of a run.
Well, but what about USC?
Well, whatever. I don't, you know, care less.
I know, but, you know, I can't watch Lane Kiffin lose enough games.
Oh, he's hideous. So, yeah, that's what I mean. So, you know, I'm more happy to see UCLA. They seem to be trying to do something there.
Yeah. Yeah, and my beloved Mountaineers take on just about the last border rivalry we've got left. We get Maryland this weekend.
I know, but who the hell? I only followed that first game. They pounded the shit out of that team.
Oh, Marshall, yeah, there's some bad blood there, because that's a series WVU doesn't want to be playing anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And so this was the very final Friends of Cole Bowl. And they celebrated it by just beating Marshall like they owed him money. But so far, it's been two warm-up games. Maryland will give them a game, and then the fun starts.
Well, yeah, I'm going to try to catch up
on some football this weekend, hopefully. But that reffing situation is a bit much.
I just don't think you can count on any game to be competently reffed. I mean, the fourth turnover, the reason that everything went sideways with the Broncos and the Falcons is with like 4 seconds left or something in the first quarter, there was a fumble, and there was, you know, the usual huge scrum, and a Denver guy pops out of the scrum with the ball in his hands. And these 16th tier refs immediately awarded the ball to Atlanta.
Mm.
I mean, it got so bad. You know, there are only a couple of ref calls that you can throw the red flag on.
Yeah.
And what's his name? John Fox, head coach of the Broncos. I thought he was going to tear his pants off trying to get the flag out of his pocket. You know, because the call, I forget which call it was, but the call was so obviously wrong. I mean, you, me, anybody could have gotten it right, but not that goober.
Oh, see, I mean, it's bad.
I mean, I'm sitting here looking at Sunday's schedule, and every one of these games is going to be subject to that.
Well, no, because the one game that I think is going to be kind of interesting is it Arizona and Philadelphia? Is that right? I wouldn't be surprised if they got beat again, Philly.
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me at all. Well, look how they – I mean, no, I'm not putting down the Browns. I'm not trying to offend any Browns fans, but they struggled with the Browns.
Yeah, and it's just kind of – anyway, we'll see. But it's hard to even talk about it when you have this sort of ugly overhang of the really bad officiating that's so important to have a, you know, decent product. But anyway.
All right, well, everything's been reduced to Sandlot. And you know, just, I don't know, you might as well just argue the calls amongst yourselves and get the guys in the striped jerseys off the field.
Yeah, anyway. Well, I mean, we'll see. But I kind of, for some reason, I thought, oh, they bound to get this hooked up because we're getting deep into the
No, but Steve Young's right. They have no incentive.
No, and that's the thing. As I saw that, I thought, oh, okay, well, this might just go on and on, I guess.
And you know, these guys, just once I'd like to hear one of those pro-union guys refer to these replacement refs as what they are.
Scabs.
Scabs.
Exactly. No, that would be great.
But, I mean, the phone wires would melt from NFL headquarters to ESPN or wherever if they called them that. But they are. They're scabs.
And not to mention the sort of ill-informed fans. You know how they are. But anyway, listen, yeah, I have to go and take care of these girls and their treats. So I'll
That's cool.
talk to you soon.
You're a good auntie, Sandra.
Okay.
Take care.
Bye.
Have a good weekend. Bye now. That's Sandra calling from California. And if you enjoy football, you kind of got to have some level of officiating, or else it all kind of goes to hell. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah, so you say.
Yeah, well, you know, it's. I mean,
if
you don't have a Russian judge sitting there saying 3.2 at the gymnastics competition.
Well, I mean, that's fine, but I mean, you know, Karl Marx said that religion was the opiate of the people, and I think to a certain extent, football was the opiate of this country.
Well, football, yeah. Basketball, baseball, soccer, hockey,
all of that crap,
NASCAR, Boo Boo Child,
and these people who have TBI, most of them when they leave the field, well, like whoever, I mean. I was watching Bill Mayer, and he had Bob Costas on. And Costas was going on about the fact that they're going to have neurologists in the grandstand or whatever you want to call it around the Circus Maximus. And I was just thinking, well, what the hell would that do? These guys are out there battering each other in the head, and the sport is becoming more and more aggressive and bloody. So what's a neurologist going to do sitting up in the stand?
Well, you can't proactively.
They're going to have them wired up there so they can neurologist has a screen reading on.
Well, I mean, they've got new rules in place that are supposed to alleviate some of this, but
you know that's bullshit, and I do too.
And well, no, I mean you're still going to have helmet to helmet contact, and there's no helmet in the world that can stop basically bruising of the brain if the impact is fierce enough.
It only protects the skull. It doesn't protect the brain. That's
precisely.
Sure.
Precisely. And
the brain is being rattled around in the skull. But, you know.
And the players are, as compared to years past, Jim, you're absolutely right, they are bigger, they are stronger, they're faster, and that means the impacts are going to transmit more force.
And they're uglier.
In some ways, yeah.
They're just uglier in their demeanor and their character and in the fact that they're paid so much to do this, what they're paid to do. That's just what I think about. You know, that's you. Fine. You, Sandra, fine. Love you. But I would prefer a weekend of Golden Girls, Roseanne, and what Johnny Weir decided to do than I would that.
Understood. And, you know, that's why there are 172 cable channels. We are, whether it be football or Here Comes Honey Boo Boo Child, that, you know, and that was the genesis of some of that, Jim. That is, the ratings numbers are shockingly low for all of these news channels. A couple of nights ago, MSNBC beat Fox 576,000 to 525,000. That's a national audience of 25 to 54. That's the key demographic.
You know, I look at a lot of TV, okay, and I flip from news channel to news channel, except I do skip Fox because I can't take that.
Right.
But
I mean,
every time I flip from one channel to the other, there's no news being pumped in. It's all advertisements.
Yeah, and I experienced the same thing driving home from D.C.
Go from CNN all the way to MSNBC on the channel and just hit it. And you won't see any news coming over. It's going to be advertisements. Or if you do see news coming over, it's going to be, and when we get back, we're going to tell you about Ann Romney's near forced landing.
God, isn't she a piece of work, Jim?
Well, she's already done a forced landing on her damn head. And the trouble is, her damn head, not a hair was moved on it.
No. No, absolutely not.
No, not at all. And as far as the Ann Romney doll is concerned, you know, I'm going to have my nephew pay for it, if he will, because I'm not going to spend $25 on a thing, and I'll fill it full of helium and float it. After making a few slight cosmetic changes.
Well, but you're going to... how will people know it's an Ann Romney doll unless there's an inflatable Rafalka to go with her?
No, I'm going to hang a sign on it for the Ann Romney.
Halloween is on the way, isn't it?
That's it. You got it. I mean, you know, today's the autumnal equinox, and which is leading up to All Hallows Eve, so why not? I mean, you know, just fill it full of helium and float it and put some few people's names around here that I just love and see where it lands. I mean, you know, it's just amazing
But, you know, those right-wingers, some of them think that she's beautiful and well-preserved, so I'd take care lest anybody bite her in the neck and see her fly away.
Well, so does Zahi Awas think about Tutankhamun's mummy, except he has problems with that, too. Because that's basically what she looks like. She looks like she's been embalmed like Eva Peron. Have you ever seen the photographs of Eva Peron or Evita?
Yes. Yes, I have.
And I swear to God, Ann Romney looks as much animated as Eva Peron's corpse. Think about it.
Well, in that soundbite that I played, did you notice, you know, before we got to the part where she was, stop it, where she said that, where she said, well, we just put our heads down and go forward.
Yeah, what, I know.
There's stuff that a trained psychologist could get pretty interested in just the terminology that she uses.
Well, there's a lot of pathology there. There's no question. There is. And as far as I'm concerned, she could put her head forward and go forward right into a combine. I'd be glad to be driving the machine when she did.
I mean, why do you make a video and send it to your husband? She can't speak to him directly? I mean, is that forbidden in the faith
maybe,
or something? Or?
Maybe it's because she's trying to increase his level of visual literacy. Who knows?
Yeah, or maybe she's afraid that he'd just smack the snot out of her.
Well, that's a possibility, too. I mean, because, after all, these Mormon wives are supposed to be totally and completely subservient.
Submissive.
well, submissive to their husbands, and maybe they have, I would love to see their inner closet and see all the rubber and leather and chains and stuff they've got in there, and caps with FS devices on them. I mean, I'm sure it would make real
pornography. Remember Harry's email from the other night? The number one porn subscribing state in the union is Utah.
Yeah, they are all so horny because they're also prohibited by their so-called whatever they practice out there from indulging in certain things. So they got to sit there and, well, you know, before the monitor on the VDT, they're going to have to sit there and try to relieve themselves. And I've always said one thing about masturbation, you certainly don't have to look your best.
Perfect for a Friday, Jim.
Well, it's the truth. I mean, good Lord in heaven.
It also means never having to say you're sorry.
Unless it happens to hit the keyboard and short it out.
Oh, yes.
Got to watch out for that now. Got to watch out for that now. I mean, you know, you gotta be, you know,
that's like Marty writing in the other night and saying, remind me never to buy any used keyboards from Utah.
Well, yeah. I mean, they might have a certain odor of sanctity about them. But, honestly and truly. But
you're awful. You know that? You're just awful.
Why?
Oh, odor of sanctity. You're just
wicked.
Well,
you know, I'll tell you the truth, Bob. I just can't get over parts of my youth in which I've always been sort of a practical joker and something of a rake. And I've never, ever lied to you on this program about things that I've done in my life, have I?
No.
As a matter of fact, I've always been labeled or have been labeled by other people as being just totally outrageous and completely out of the grace of God by a lot of right-winger people whom I know, including my sister.
Well, you remind me of that great line. I think it was, and she was one of the most brilliant straight man, but she was a woman, Margaret Dumond.
Oh, yeah.
Who looked at Groucho Marx and said, well, I never. And he said, well, maybe you should.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a whole lot of that.
You know, I remember years when I was a boy watching the Jack Parr show, they used to have this woman who was a lesbian, a devout lesbian who was in, had a relationship with Peggy Fears, who established the first concrete motel on Fire Island. And Peggy Fears was just a voluptuous woman, beautiful woman. And she would come on and talk about the weather, and she said, and here is 34, there is 24, and I'm 36. She was an absolute hoot. I mean, and I remember that from being 10 years old. And like I say, if you ever can watch a documentary of Fire Island, where the sky meets the sea or something like that, you can pull it up. It's incredible to hear about some of the people who are associated with that particular area of the world, and also Provincetown. Provincetown Diaries, that's a good book for you to read, too. Really is. By Michael Cunningham. Excellent book.
Well, it's a fascinatingly underappreciated part of the culture. And
well, I mean, you had so much culture accumulated there in terms of writers and creative artists there. I mean, when Billie Holiday lost her cabaret license in New York because of drugs, Provincetown was the only place where she could find work. And, of course, it was the home of Norman Mailer and so many other people.
Eugene O'Neill for a time, right?
Yeah, exactly. He had a beach house that he had inherited from his father, and, of course, it was his heaven until it was washed away by a hurricane. But being that close to the seashore, well, these are the inherent problems of such a location. But P-Town in July is something you really need to see, particularly around the 4th.
I've still got more traveling to do.
Well, you sure do. And as far as, let's see, what else has happened in the world today? You had mentioned something about, who was it?
Rand Paul?
Yeah, Rand Paul. What in the hell is that idiot trying to do? I mean, I have never.
Well, what is it? What does that mean when he says, "Well, we successfully bid down some prices"? Ah, that sucker's never cut his fee in his life.
Yeah, I would probably have problems with that. As a matter of fact, I separated from my local physician because of politics.
Walked in and caught him running Fox in the Fox News in the waiting room. Did you?
Signs?
Mm-hmm.
Sure did.
Obama's going to get your. Obama's going to get
all kinds of drivel and balderdash. And, you know, it's just incredible that these people are so brainwashed to be so intellectual. And I don't know.
Well, but Jim, there's something underneath what you just said that I think has merit in discussing, and that is there is a reason for a broad-based liberal arts curriculum being required of all students to the college or university. But more and more now, for instance, if you want to be a libertarian ophthalmologist, for instance, you might miss out on, you know, you got to take English 101 and you got to take English 102, right?
Right.
Well, then you're done with the English department. So English 101 and 102 are not going to get you into Shakespeare. And, okay, so you got to have History 1. Well, okay, I'm done with history now. What? 2 years of a foreign language? Oh, all right, French. And, you know, there are two semesters. Okay, well, my two semesters are done there. And everything else is trade school. And
yeah,
that is not, and that's not to in any wise denigrate that concept. But there's a value to more broad-based thinking. And when you see things like what you witnessed there in your physician's office, I would suggest that perhaps that's some of the blowback, if you will.
Well, it's the underpinning of a liberal arts education or an open arts education in which you basically become a basic model of some type of ersatz version of a Renaissance man. But what it produces are professionals who know the price of everything and the value of nothing.
Right. So I'm sure Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, probably had four semesters of cost accounting for medical practices.
Oh, absolutely.
But who's to say whether he ever read John Donne's No Man Is an Island?
Oh, I would dare say that he didn't. I mean, you know, anybody who would be stupid enough to actually...
You've told us about your college years, and even in something as regimented and obviously military as the Citadel, you had a profoundly liberal arts influenced education. You know,
absolutely. You
didn't spend 4 years learning how to field strip an M6, an M1 Garand or whatever.
Well, I had other classes in which I learned that, and they were at the Citadel. You know, and of course I had ROTC, and went through that, and of course. Went to the natural.
But you had a boatload of science. You had a bunch of history. You had a bunch of language and literature.
Yes, absolutely. And was fortunate enough to have experience in a foreign language by being overseas for 3 years. And I consider myself, well, very lucky compared to those people.
But that was an educational philosophy. That existed pretty much all over the country, and for the most part, we have given. That was my point. We have given up on that.
The liberal arts field has become so attenuated and so focused on this, that, and the other. But basically, what it produces are automatons, or robots, or people who have only one thing on their mind, and that is how to get the most people into their office, whether you're a lawyer, physician, or whatever, so I can grab the most amount of money from them at the highest price. That's exactly what it's preaching in this country today, with no thought of humanity, no thought of the care and compassion that is contained in the Hippocratic Oath or the other oaths that, for example, an attorney has to take when he's admitted to the bar. I mean, these things have become unimportant, irrelevant.
You know, it's interesting the turn that this conversation has taken, Jim. It was a week or so ago that our buddy Dr. John sent me a note with a link in it. The story itself was a couple of years old, but it is right on point to what we're talking about. A couple of years ago, the State University of New York at Albany that had a president by the name of George M. Philip, and he proposed the elimination of their French, Italian, Russian, and classics departments. Because, well, you know, there just wasn't a lot of call for it. And
well,
he wrote...
and I remember when the curriculum of medieval universities was the trivium and the quadrivium, right?
Yeah. Well, Gregory A. Petsko, who...
what a name.
He was a molecular biologist, is, I suppose, still, not even associated with SUNY Albany, delivered an absolute jeremiad against this university president, explaining exactly why you need the liberal arts. And somewhere along...
My apologies about his name.
No worries, no worries. I will send this link to you because I think you will find it, one, something that speaks exactly to the topicality of what we're discussing, but at the same time, I think you'll also find it to be delightful in its wit and venom.
Good. I enjoy wit and venom. I really do.
Well, and I know you do. This was just perfectly introduced. And here in a couple of minutes, I'll share some of the text of it with the rest of the Horn family.
Second, if you would give me about 15 more seconds.
Oh, go right ahead. Take all the time you need.
Well, I voted today.
Yes.
I told you. And, you know, I just voted the straight ticket because I didn't know these people, and I'm not going to unsuspectingly know about voting for some type of asshole Republican because I've heard enough of them over...
Well, generally speaking, there's no Republican on any ticket in West Virginia that could possibly have any commonality of interest with you, Jim.
Dr. Shit Show, and as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to that, like George said to Martha said to George and Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, when it comes to voting mixed tickets, I say, what for you? Rubbing alcohol, never mix, never worry. I've got to watch that show tonight because it always gives me spiritual renewal.
Well, it's something special. I just got done reading The Maltese Falcon. I like my hard-boiled detective fiction sometimes. And it had been a long time since I had read that.
It was a great movie. He wrote that, Dashiell Hammett?
Yeah, Dashiell Hammett wrote that. And, of course, he was... he had a several decades relationship with Lillian Hellman.
Exactly. Have you seen the movie about them? It's excellent.
No, I haven't. I've heard about that. At
it's
some point,
a
I should.
Good film about you know his relationship with Lillian Hellman, and there have been other things that and there was another film that came out decades ago called Pedimento.
Well, there's another film film that came out a couple of months back, ran on HBO. About Ernest Hemingway's relationship with Martha Gellhorn.
Oh, yeah, saw that.
I haven't. Was it worth the time?
Yeah, absolutely. I'll tell you another one that's very good for you to watch, and that's with the guy who played Owen. Is it Owen Wilson whose nose was broken twice? You can see it.
Yeah, I think.
It's called Midnight in Paris. In which he, when he is roaming the streets of nocturnal Paris, goes back to the Paris of the 20s and Shakespeare and company.
Oh, wow.
And meets all the people. There's Cole Porter is playing at the piano, and there is Sally Fields playing Gertrude Stein. It's a marvel.
Really? Sally Fields is Gertrude Stein? That's
Absolutely.
Interesting.
Absolutely. And she is, of course, you know, at her place at... I forget the address, Rue de Fleurus in Paris, when she is there holding court, and there's Alice B. Toklas, and of course you have all the different artists coming in to her salon, and she is giving him criticism, and Hemingway is getting his criticism from the lady he later called an old tub of guts. But nonetheless, I think Hemingway had a lot of respect for her, and for Hemingway, for a woman, that says a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Of course,
he was pretty much, in my opinion, something of a misogynist in his own way. But nonetheless, it's a good film. Midnight in Paris, Owen Wilson. He's a good actor.
I'll look for that. I'll see if we can't get that shipped in on Netflix.
I hope you can, but nonetheless, I'm glad I got my vote out of the way, because who knows, might not be there on November 6th, but at least it went in, and at least it went in on paper.
Well, right, it did go in on paper, because God only knows what happens to your vote when it goes into the guts of one of these machines.
Well, these machines, I mean, I never liked Pac-Man in the first place, never enjoyed pinball, never enjoyed all these electronic things, because I just couldn't see the point in them. I'd rather spend my time doing something else, but nonetheless, that's just me. I'm in the minority, and I'm, of course, a geek, I guess. But I'll tell you one thing. This geek has tried to do as much as he can for his country, and has never loved his country less than any of these people who get up there and make a pulpit deliverance of it.
Amen to that, Jim. Amen to that.
I can tell you that, because when the red light's blinking and you've got a countdown, and I thought about that stupid woman nearly going down in a plane. I wish they had as many announcements about people going down in a plane as I've had. And believe you me, it ain't no fun. And I will say this for clarification. I wasn't a pilot, but I flew a desk. But I've been in enough of them, let me tell you.
Oh, I have no doubt of it.
It wasn't fun. And being a crispy critter is not my way to go to Co-op or Blow Lob or wherever the hell these people were supposed to go. Let me tell you, not any fun.
No. No.
Well, listen, let me let you go. You've had a good show here, and enjoy your weekend, and you're going to be broadcasting next week?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Well, I'm going to be out of position here, so I won't be the recipient, I don't think, in, after Thursday at least. But nonetheless, it's just incredible to see what is happening to this country, and it is what is, you know, being done by Romney, and how that guy changes from day to day, and what his worldview is. I mean, I just don't understand it.
I suspect. I mean, I'm not disagreeing to be disagreeable. I think you do understand it, Jim.
Well, his worldview is limited to the confines of this counting house.
Yes. If he can't put a dollar sign on it, it has no value in life.
Oh, that's very sad, Bob. Like I say, these people know the price of everything and the value of nothing. And by the way, next week, next month, on the 16th, is Oscar Wilde's birthday.
Really?
Yes, which I always try to get a green carnation and a black cigarette.
Nicely done, Jim.
Okay.
There are very few members of the Horn family I would expect to say that, but I'm proud to say that you are one of the ones I would.
The guy was absolutely brilliant. And the way he was pilloried, it was just absolutely horrible and broken. I mean, it's just an incredible Irish playwright. The importance of being earnest. Of course, you have the picture of Dorian Gray. And, you know, when I look at some of these people on TV, like at the Republican convention, in spite of their plastic surgeries and all this kinds of stuff or whatever, even if they didn't have the benefit of such, I would just wonder where their portraits are hidden.
And that is a deeply disturbing piece of writing.
Because when you look at that portrait hidden in the schoolroom of Dorian's top floor mansion in Belgravia, or Mayfair. No, it was Mayfair. It wasn't too pretty, was it?
No. No.
Because basically, when he finally stabbed the portrait, they could only recognize him by the rings he wore. Happy Halloween.
Indeed. Jim, have a good weekend.
And the same to you, sir.
Bye now. It's our good buddy Jim from across the river. Yeah, what a squirrely little story this is. The Romney campaign is reporting that Mrs. Romney's plane was forced to make an unexpected landing after smoke, allegedly the result of an electrical fire, began filling the cabin. Anybody want to bet? You can check the odds at Harris and Reno. Anybody want to check that? Anybody want to lay down a bet on how long it takes the right wing the media megaphone to start screaming that this was an attempt on her life? Probably, you know, by the minions of that one, you know, the Kenyan Muslim with a deep-seated hatred of white people. Or maybe it's already been done. They've no shame. None whatsoever. Mark writing in with a note for Jim. He says, "Thank you, Jim. Somewhere along the way, you may have stopped World War III." Mention of Dashiell Hammett brought Irish Dave to the fore. The best Dashiell Hammett phrase ever. I nominate "Run by the cops, the crooks, and the big rich." Dashiell Hammett, who gave us the Dane curse, the glass key, the red harvest, the Maltese falcon, was a noted leftist and was blacklisted for his politics and tormented. And yet he served in the First World War and in the Second. A sergeant in both. A sergeant, and he would have been like 46 years old when he demanded that he be allowed into the United States military and served his hitch in World War II in the Aleutian Islands, because there was always a possibility that the Aleutians would be invaded. And in fact, there were some attempts, but was blacklisted for his politics. Go figure. Go figure. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Bob.
How are you, Kevin?
Good. Nice and fall-like out here in Colorado Springs for a change.
I guess is that on time or early or late?
Depends. I've seen it as early as the last week of August, mid-August, actually 1 July. I can remember it getting quite cold at a picnic, so it varies, but it seems to be on time this year. I'm blind, of course, so I don't see the fall colors, but I haven't heard a lot of talk about the color, the leaves changing yet, but you definitely feel it at night quite regularly now. You can kind of smell fall in the air, so something to be happy about. The changing of the seasons.
And yeah.
The fact that...
Well, we're seeing some colors come up on, you know, what's left of the mountains here as well.
Yeah, and I heard on the Minnesota station, I was told that they're expecting snow tonight out there in Minnesota, so it must be on its way. As hot as it was this summer, I was beginning to wonder if it ever gets
here. There's plenty of time and room left for it to be plenty weird.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but out here in Colorado Springs, by this time of year, you generally have already seen the leaves turning that. That's kind of the thing. It does vary from year to year, but, you know, by what, we're at September 21st? You know, by this time, we're seeing signs of fall. And I haven't really noticed those signs of fall until about the last week or so. So, and of course, I perceive it a little bit different than others because I don't have the visual stimulation of it, but I do kind of smell it in the air and feel it in the air as well. So, but I was going to ask you, of course, I've been a listener for about a year now, give or take. Why is the Fighting Bob Fest called the Fighting Bob Fest?
It's named after Bob La Follette, who was a progressive senator from Wisconsin. Among other things, he was one of the few senators with the guts to oppose World War One. I mean, that's just a trivia. Well, I don't think it's trivial, but he was an unabashed progressive and made no bones about it and raised hell as one in the Senate of the United States, and he earned the nickname Fighting Bob La Follette. Or La Follette.
Okay.
Laffolette, I believe.
Yep.
If you and I got to get those things. I got to get those files to Ben at some point. But if you had heard John Nichols' address at the very end of the gathering this past Saturday, he gave a pretty good history of Fighting Bob La Follette.
Yep. So was that broadcast over the horn?
Oh yeah.
Saturday?
Oh yeah. I streamed the whole thing.
Yeah. No, I didn't catch it on Saturday. I did catch the one show, and I don't remember what day it was, but I did catch part of one show that you did over there. But last week or two has been kind of crazy. So today, you're talking about the doctor and the medical situation. They referred me to a doctor I can't go to because I don't have transportation to there. No public transportation goes to this particular doctor. And it's not by accident that that doctor is up where he is, as far as I'm concerned. We've seen a migration of medical doctors out to toward that part of town because by virtue of the fact that there is not public transportation out there, this tends to weed out a lot of the Medicare and Medicaid folks. And therefore, they seem to think...
Oh, you mean so they're getting more of those Rand Paul down-bidding cash client patients or something?
Exactly. But the economy and such like it is, Bob, if I were a doctor, I would more than want my Medicare and Medicaid clients because that's guaranteed money. You know the government's going to pay you for those. Whereas on some of these insurance plans, you're not guaranteed that you're going to get paid, or you're not guaranteed that, like you were saying before, because the 80-20 thing actually turns out to be 50-50, you're not guaranteed that those clients are going to be coming to you when they find out their deductible is much higher than what they think it is. And when they can't afford to pay that deductible, they stop coming to you. So, you know, it's greed at its best.
Well, onward to dystopia. Just asked you a question from the chat room, Kevin. He said, Colorado Springs must be a real godforsaken place to live, eh?
No, I like.
I think there was a play on words there, since you know, since it's the home of the evangelical religion industry.
Yeah, and there are parts of it that tend to frustrate me, but I like the friendliness of the people out here. I do, you know, even in this town, 40% or so are progressive. So it is not like I am out here with an 80-20 percentage and feel like I'm on an island. I've been able to kind of form bonds and that with good progressives out here and insulate myself, is the word I'm looking for, from some of this right-wing madness. And so it's just frustrating with this doctor thing because I'm just seeing more of it lately where doctors are being more open about, oh, you're on Medicare, Medicaid, we're going to find a reason not to take you, or we're going to move out of the area. out of that service area, so you can't get to us unless you find a ride or whatever. But the point is, they know they're weeding out people by doing that. And of course, with this Republican mayor that we have, who wants to take our public transportation system and shrink it even more, you know, this is a big town. And my gosh, we don't even serve probably a third of it by public transportation. It has just gotten to the point of, you know.
Well, Jim just responded to some of what you're discussing, Kevin, by noting doctors may flee to the affluent areas because many doctors have the compassion of a T-Rex and the bedside manner of a dial tone.
Yep. Yep, it's the biggest thing. I served as an EMT in the 90s, and I can tell you, I saw the start of it then, but I never could envision what it would be like during 2012. I just never could envision the openness of it, of what I've seen. And, you know, what do? You just march onward and you continue to work to make it better. And some of these right-wing people out here do not realize how much, and granted, it's not perfect and it's not what we wanted, but Obamacare is going to make it possible for a lot of people and is making it possible for a lot of people to have health care that before this came into effect, they didn't have any health care options at all. And, you know, I wanted it to be a single-payer system. I think it'd be great if it was Medicare for all.
Oh, I think that's the only way. Ultimately, that's the only way, Kevin, that we fix any of this. You cannot fix a profitized, profit-driven, profit-based system that is predicated on making money on the agony, illness, misery, and ultimately the death of people. Any profit system that is based on that is doomed to failure. Isn't it?
Yeah, but it's they want it all attitude, and eventually those that want it all will get it all. But then what happens at that point? The all that they get will be gone because there will be nothing left, and eventually they end up in the same circumstances as the rest of us. And
I mean, consider for a moment that appearance yesterday by Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, on Morning Jerk.
Yep.
Now, how many people watched that and saw and heard him say that capitalism really hasn't been tried in medicine? How many heard that, Kevin, and said, "Well, you know what? I reckon he's probably right. He's got a point." Without giving it a second thought, when in fact the heart and soul of the healthcare insurance industry is nothing but the most naked, raw, bloodthirsty, dripping fang manifestation of capitalism that has ever been seen, because it is predicated on the agony, illness, misery, and ultimately the death of human beings.
Exactly.
So, you know, maybe by pointing that out, we perform a little service here, Kevin. I don't know.
But the problem I see is, unless someday we install a Medicare for all system and get the profit making out of medicine, and when I say get the profit making out, I'm talking mostly about the
insurance industry.
Exactly. Because I don't begrudge a doctor who's gone through 8 years of school
and has tremendous bone-crushing debt.
Yes, exactly. So it is not the doctors that I'm paying. It's the insurance companies that have, in large part, divided patients and doctors. case in point, you go to the doctor, and the doctor says you need to have this test, and the insurance company denies it, and the doctor tries to do something else, and the insurance company denies it, and eventually at that point, the doctor is getting frustrated, and the patient's getting frustrated.
See, Kevin, I spent so much to the extent that I spent a lot of time talking about the Affordable Care Act. The biggest focus of it for me was the expansion of Medicaid that was paid for in its entirety by the federal government. Wouldn't have cost a single state a damn dime to participate in, and
exactly.
And ultimately, you see, I don't know how many progressive people who want Medicare for all. I don't know how many progressive people, some sort of universal single-payer health care. I don't know how many progressive people realized how important that was.
Yep.
Because if it was going to start out at 137% of the poverty level, well, a few years down the road, if we got any kind of a decent Congress with a half of a conscience to it, they could have expanded it to 152%, and then 200%. And that was the original plan, by the way, for Medicare. Had Johnson run for another term, Medicare would have been downwardly departed from 65 to 60 to 55 to 50, 45, until everybody was covered. And this was that again. But while so many in the progressive community didn't realize that, by God, those thugs, those stark conservatives, Scalia, Thomas, Alito, Roberts, and Kennedy, they did, and that is why the Medicaid expansion was the one part of the Affordable Care Act that was struck down. It was the one hope we had of expanding a single-payer health care system to the rest of the country.
Yep. And then you've got every one of these teabag governor types that are refusing to allow the Affordable Health Care Act to be implemented in their state. We're not going to take that. That's kind of...
Yeah, well, we're still waiting here in West Virginia to find out. I might be able to go to the doctor again someday if we expanded it. But until then, screw that. Yeah, not a chance. Hey, Kevin, I got a roll, brother, but it's good to hear from you, and I hope you have a great weekend.
You too, Bob.
All right. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Jim observing, my God, during the initial office visit, the questions are not about maladies, but methods of payment. And that's the truth. And Irish Dave observing, as doctors used to say, the quality of medical care is dependent on its price. Or as Papa Doc Paul would say, we're in it for the money. Along the way, noting, those would be the heavily subsidized medical schools, you know, the ones that are generating all the debt for graduating medical students. The American Medical Association is busily limiting the supply of providers. And that, too, is true. Jeebus. Onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Brother Bob.
Hey, Koss, what's happening?
Well, in the hospital again.
Oh, no. Are you calling from the hospital?
Yes, I am.
Oh, damn. What's happening?
Broke three bones in my ankle.
Ow!
Yeah.
I thought we talked about not going ice skating in Florida.
Yeah. It was a mess. I started losing balance. I mean, I was just walking from one room to another. And started losing balance more and more. Kept on putting more and more weight on that one. On that one ankle, and I felt the bones break.
Eh. Ow. Everybody in the Horn family is just grimacing right now.
And I passed out. It seems that I had a minor heart attack.
They think you did?
Yeah. The blood chemistry I got back shows that I had a heart attack.
And broke your ankle at the same time.
Yeah.
Well, what are they telling you, Cossack?
Oh, it's going to be a while. Staying here for 2 weeks. Got 3 pins in my ankle. And 2 plates. went to see the doctor today, and they had a chance to x-ray the ankle, and it looks like everything's okay. They may actually be releasing me from here in a couple of days. Oh gosh.
Well, that's horrible, Cossack. When did all this happen?
About 2 weeks ago.
Well, you have been notably absent. Your absence has been noted. I don't know what to say.
I mean,
your brother's there and everything, right?
Yeah. Thank God for minor miracles.
Well, you've got to keep us posted.
I will.
And let us know because, you know, family is family.
Yeah, it's been kind of a mess.
It is kind of neat that you would, Jim saying, Cossack, all my best for a speedy recovery, and may this pass quickly. God bless.
Thank you, Jim.
You were the one, I've been thinking about you because, you know, you were the one who had initially introduced me to Joe Bajant.
Yep.
And I think you and I have talked about the fact that I couldn't find the file. Well, lo and behold, our buddy Ray has been meticulously digging through the archives, listening to show after show after show. And I got news from him today that he had found it. And so I immediately thought of you. Maybe that's kind of why I conjured you. Or you got conjured. He went into the very deep archives of the Horn at WhiteRoseSociety.org.
Uh-huh.
And it is listed as Kincaid Show 1-6-2007. And you remember what a humdinger of a show that was.
Yes, I do.
So I can't, like I said, I thought of you immediately. And I can't wait to open this thing up and give it a listen, because I'm gonna get hold of the guys that are still running Joe's website and make sure that they have it that they can put up on their servers for anybody who wants to listen.
Because
it was a dandy good conversation.
You know, it's amazing how much damage you can do. You know, all I was doing was trying to regain my balance.
Hmm.
Yeah. That's the problem I was.
Mark just wrote in and said, keep fighting, Cossack, keep fighting.
I'm doing the best I can.
So you're going to be in there for a couple more weeks?
Well, I've been in here for a couple of weeks. Hopefully, they're going to be letting me out soon in the near future.
Well, what are they doing about your heart?
Now they're doing not much.
Oh, by the way, you've gotten an order from the chat room. No flirting with the nurses.
I'll try not to. It's kind of hard.
I understand.
But it's been rough. It's been rough. Yeah, it's kind of a bitch when you can actually hear the bones break.
I can't even conceive of that.
Yeah, right before.
So when it happened, was there somebody there with you? I mean,
no, I was by myself, and what was bad was. I fell down on Saturday night and managed to struggle to my feet somehow and got a hold of a cane and trying to hobble around on that for a day. And then I was trying to get to the bathroom on Sunday, and I fell again. That's when I broke the third bone, and it was literally one of those. I have fallen and I can't get up.
Well, at least we know you didn't break your sense of humor.
So I got up on my knees and hobbled over to the dining room table, so I call my brother and say, do me a favor and call 911 and tell them not to use sirens and horns at all. I just can't get up and you can't pick me up.
That's awful. That's awful. Well, God, I hope you get out. I hope you get out quick. I mean, at this point, anything will be quick, right? After 2 weeks?
Correct.
But you're getting good care?
Best can be expected.
That's a very American answer, Cossack. Well, brother, rest up and let us know when you're out or that you're still in, but please stay in touch, all right?
Will do. Will do, Bob.
All right. Thank you for calling in, Cossack. I really appreciate you getting us up, well, just getting us informed.
My love to Agnes and kids.
I will tell them. I will surely tell them, and they will send it back in your direction.
Big hugs to everybody, please.
Absolutely. There's all kinds of get well soons going on in the chat room. You know that bunch.
Yep. I appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
You take care, Cossack, and make sure they take care of you.
Will do, Bob.
All right.
Thank you much.
It's a pleasure. Just get to feeling better, all right?
Working on it.
That's all we can expect. Later, brother.
All right, take care, Bob.
You too. Bye now. Our good buddy the Cossack in a bad place. I guess kind of both spiritually and physically. I hate talking about what a craptastic healthcare system we have. I mean, that's going to come off wrong. It is disturbing and painful. Disturbing. Cossack's having the pain. It is disturbing to talk about what a craptastic healthcare system we have and then be reminded of it by someone who has been listening to this program for about as long as this program has existed. And Rand Paul wants to let capitalism run the care that the Cossack is trying to get. What does capitalism care for how Cossack is treated? Or any person who falls into the tender mercies of an already profit-driven healthcare system. What does it care? A corporation's only duty is to generate more profit. And that is so whether it be a car company, a widget factory, or a health insurance company. When the well-being of the American people comes second behind the well-being of profiteering, Wall Street-addicted corporations, well, like Dennis Hopper said, bad things, man, bad things. Been a heck of a Friday on the front porch. We'll be back Monday. You know that. One last thing to point out before closing things down this evening. In the midst of a whole lot of other talk out there, it is by all means worth mentioning and making sure that it doesn't fly under the radar. And our good friend Dave Nywert over at Crooks and Liars has a post from today, earlier this afternoon. Domestic terrorism. Senate hears testimony about the rise of the right-wing threat. Remember the last time when the George W. Bush administration issued a warning about the rise of right-wing terrorism in this country? Remember the hissy that the right-wing had? Well, it's possible the only way any of us would know about this outside of Dave Nywert writing about it is if the right wing threw a hissy about it. One part of that hearing, it was chaired by Dick Durbin of Illinois, one part of that hearing featured a plea from a young man by the name of Hapreet Singh Saini. He's the son of one of the people slaughtered at the Sikh Temple of Wisconsin earlier. And he's begging, and what a heart-rending thing it is. Remember, this was a right-wing domestic terrorist who destroyed the lives of so many on that unforgettable day now. But he went to the Senate to beg. He said, "Senators, I came here today to ask the government to give my mother the dignity of being a statistic. My mother and those shot that day will not even count on a federal form. We cannot solve a problem we refuse to recognize." And I think that applies even more largely to the issue of right-wing domestic terrorism. But you see, on the form regarding the crime to which Mr. Saini's mother was subjected, the murder of his mother, well, the FBI and the Department of Justice, they don't have a checkbox for Sikhs in the United States. If you get murdered because you're a Sikh, the only thing you've got demographically
is that you were murdered because you were a Sikh, a Muslim, an Arab, or a South Asian American. I mean, that takes in Hindus, Jains, Buddhists. And so he had to go to the Senate to beg for his mother to be allowed to be a statistic. But also a part of that hearing was a man by the name of Daryl Johnson. The hearing was called Hate Crimes and the Threat of Domestic Extremism. Former Department of Homeland Security analyst Daryl Johnson said the following. The threat of domestic terrorism motivated by extremist ideologies is often dismissed and overlooked in the national media and within the U.S. government. Amen, brother. Yet we are currently seeing an upsurge in domestic non-Islamic extremist activity. See, he had to put non-Islamic in there so that the Pamela Gellers of the world wouldn't go, see, 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 they're gonna, there's a rolling Muslim tide that's going to take us over. We are currently seeing an upsurge in domestic non-Islamic extremist activity, specifically from violent right-wing extremists. That means that 99.9% of them ain't Latinos, ain't Muslims, ain't African-American folks. It is violent, hate-filled, Republican-voting white folks. He said, while violent left-wing attacks were more prevalent in the 1970s, today the bulk of violent domestic activity emanates from the right wing. Yeah, but what about the Weather Underground and the New Black Panthers? No, that's not the problem. Crazy, hate-filled, bloodthirsty, murderous white folks are the greatest thing, the greatest internal threat that this country has today. Go read Dave Nyward's report at crooksandliars.com. Domestic terrorism, Senate hears testimony about the rise of right-wing threat. There is no greater expert in this country on the rise of right-wing eliminationism, extremism, and terrorism than Dave Nyward over at Crooks and Liars. I consider him a friend. So thank you all for a wonderful week. Thank you for all the help you have given in keeping us on the air, keeping the horn on the air. And I look forward to Monday and more in Monday and being back here with you all. I hope you'll be here, you know, with me. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky, our moderators in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thanks to our blogger, Texas Betsy. Thanks go out to our engineer, senior executive producer, webmaster, web designer. What isn't John Fox in Australia? Thank you, John. And thanks to Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. He's never sent a bill for 10 years, but he is responsible for your being able to listen to a great deal of progressive radio on the Internet. Thank you, Ben. Thanks, of course, to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and aicact.org. Have you called your congressman to ask your congressperson to sign on to the AIC Act? If you haven't, why haven't you? Even if they're a Republican, call anyway. Go to aicact.org and learn all you can do to help end Appalachia's agony. It's that important. aicact.org. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Rick Smith is next on the Horn. Y'all have a great weekend now.